call the, today is Wednesday, March 25th. One more shopping day till my birthday. Good afternoon. Let the record show that the House Resource Committee was convened at 1 o'clock p.m. We have present with us Representative Craig Johnson, Representative Andy Josephson, Representative Bob Heron, Representative Kurt Olson, Representative Paul Seaton, and we have a quorum. My fellow co-chair, Representative Derek Tallarico, and myself, Representative Benjamin Nile. And let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones. Thank you. And I want to wish a happy belated birthday to Representative Olson, and we will sing in his honor. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Kurt. Happy birthday to you. I don't know if that's ever happened.
You're not expecting a speech, are you?
Not anymore.
I think it's the Speaker's birthday, too.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if that was good or bad.
Oh, hold on. I'm trying to turn off my phone.
Good idea.
Okay, I got mine off.
What's your number?
Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. We have just arrived representing Tom and... That's it. Today we have House Bill 100, House Bill 128, and a confirmation hearing for two members of the Board of Game, Mr. Kip Fanning and Ms. Teresa Saver, Alba. First we have House Bill 100. The committee heard this bill previously on March 11th, and members have three amendments in their package. Is there any committee discussion or amendment offered?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
I move that we adopt amendment number 1, 29LS04323/H.3.
I'll object for the purpose of discussion.
Okay, we have amendment number 1 for purpose of discussion. It's in your packet. Offered today, page 1, line 10, following delivered, inserted in the taxable year of the taxpayer, on line 4 of the amendment, page 1, line 13, following 0, insert an unused tax credit or portion of a tax credit received under this section may not be carried forward for use in the taxable year of the taxpayer of a taxable year in which the credit is earned. The amendment is on the floor and a discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the purpose of this is just to make it clear that the credits are available for that year, and they can't be, if the royalty credits are greater than the corporate tax credit, they can't be carried on for future years. So this is a 10-year program that is available, and those credits each year are available, but they must be used in that year.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Any?
If there's no further discussion, I'll remove my objection.
Okay, then objection has been removed. What is so, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If there's no other objections,
is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, there's amendment 1 has passed. And then we go on to amendment number 2. Page 1, line 10, following 2, number 2, insert the in-state processing facility owned by. Is there any committee discussion on
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seeley.
I'd move amendment number two, that's H.6.
Amendment number two has been brought to the floor in the discussion.
I'll object for the purposes of this.
I'm sorry, objection. Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's just clarifying language, but maybe we could have the sponsor come up and address the amendment.
Mr. Speaker?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Representative Chenault, District 29. Mr. Chairman, I was informed that I should lawyer up. And so I did, Mr. Chairman, and if it's all right with the committee, I'll have Don Bullock talk to the amendment.
Mr. Bullock?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Donald Bullock. I'm the House Majority Staff, and I actually am a lawyer. the purpose of the amendment, this responds to a concern that was expressed by the Department of Revenue to narrow the credit to the gas that's delivered to a taxpayer for the processing into urea of pneumonia. So if the owner of the plant bought some gas and to use it to heat another facility, and they bought the gas to be used in the processing plant, only the gas that was delivered to the processing plant that's owned by that taxpayer would be eligible to generate the credit.
Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'll remove my objection.
Any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, the amendment has passed. We move down to amendment number three. I'll read the Representative of Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number three, which is 29LS0423/H.7.
There's an amendment on the floor offered. Any discussion?
I'll object for purposes.
Objection has been raised. Any discussion on amendment? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we have the sponsor speak to this amendment as well?
Pardon?
Can we have the sponsor speak to the amendment?
Mr. Butler?
Mr. Chairman, this is an interesting credit because unlike an investment tax credit where the taxpayer goes and buys something, they know what they paid for it, they can figure out what the credit is. This credit is based on somebody else's information, and that is the royalty that's due on the leases that produce the gas that the taxpayer is going to use in the processing plant. There are a couple other, and what this does, and it's similar to existing law in the oil and gas leasing statute. Currently, the statute addresses gas that's sold and contracts for sale to certain electric utilities, and there's another provision that allows the contract to set the price for agricultural chemicals. And this amendment, number three, parallels the existing language. And what it does, it would have the lessee, first of all, negotiate with the processing plant, an arm's-length transaction, and the goal is to set a reasonable market price, or a price that the state would otherwise use to value the royalty, the gas for royalty purposes. By doing this ahead of time, the lessee that's selling the gas to the processing facility would submit the contract to the Commissioner of Natural Resources. And the Commissioner of Natural Resources would have the opportunity to look at it to make sure it's a reasonable contract, that there's no games being played, the parties aren't too close. And so the goal is to get it pretty much to the price that would have resulted if the gas was later audited for royalty purposes. And so that's a check on make sure that it's a legitimate price. By doing it this way, rather than subjecting the royalty to a later audit, is the taxpayer knows what the credit's going to be because there's a contract price and a percentage of that contract price that represents the royalty. The taxpayer knows that the producer, the lessee, has some stability in knowing what their royalty is going to be on that gas. And the Commissioner of Natural Resources would have looked at it and said, yeah, that's the price that makes sense. So everybody knows what's at play. And it's, I think it's better than the alternative to try and say, well, the taxpayer takes a credit, and then down the road, it turned out the gas wasn't worth as much, or maybe the gas is worth more. So then that raises the question of, well, what do you do with the credit, since the credit's based on the royalty and the royalty's changed? I think that this amendment number 3 deals with that up front. Everybody knows what it is. You can know what the credit is, and the lessee that sells the gas knows what their royalty is.
Any questions? Is the objection still maintained? If not, amendment number 3 is adopted. I think I better make sure this is amendment number 3, 29-L-0423/H.2 is adopted. Thank you very much, Mr. Barak. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
Let's see. Okay, dokie. With that, House Bill 100 moves from committee. I'd like to entertain a motion to move HB 100 from committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Tallarico, sorry.
I make a motion to move House Bill 100, version 29-LS0423/H, with individual recommendations, amendments, and attached fiscal note from committee.
Objection?
For discussion.
A discussion? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a fair amount of concern about tax credits and the level of tax credits across industry. I am and I've got some of that discomfort generally on tax credits. This one is very small, targeted specifically to the amount of corporate income tax that would be offset by gas that would be purchased for in-state use. It has a 10-year window, and so if it's not used in that 10 years or any portion of that 10 years, it's not a rolling 10 years. So I'm comfortable that the sideboards on this bill are tight enough that it would be a benefit to the state to get the additional work done and to hopefully add to the benefits of restarting an industry. So I just wanted to say that my general feeling is that broad tax credits are a problem to the state. This is not based on just investment. This is based on actual profitability. So we are tightening them very much, and so I'll be supportive of the bill moving, but I just wanted to put on the record that this is a well-crafted kind of tax credit instead of those that could put us at risk as being very broad-based based on the amount of investment someone makes. And we're here, it's on the end if they're successful and have a profit. Otherwise, it doesn't cost the state anything to offer this incentive for getting work and industry in Alaska. Thank you.
Any further discussion?
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Very briefly, I want to associate myself with the comments of Representative Seaton fully. And I see some real benefit here. I'm a little curious as to why the applicant says that they'll spend $275 million and they want just a few million dollars of assistance in the form of a credit. I don't understand that especially, but I think that the case they've made is compelling, and so I'm certainly not going to object to its leaving the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just also, you know, have those same concerns about the credits, but appreciate how this is targeted and share the same concerns comments just made by Representative Josephson. And just, I'd remembered in previous budgets that we had considered some funds to help support the plant when they were having difficult times before. And looking into that in 2007, we did give them a $5 million capital project, and I think that was to help the company continue when there was a natural gas shortage. I'm just hopeful in this go-around that, you know, the investments they're going to make sound to be substantial and, you know, other issues have been resolved and that, you know, that going forward we won't have to consider some of those same options again, you know, should they find themselves in trouble. So hopefully this is strikes the right balance and sounds like a lot of jobs. That's a really good thing, and I'm looking forward to their $275 million of investment in our state. That'll be good too. So just wanted to get that on the record, though, that I hope that, you know, we plan better in the future, and, you know, for potential gas shortages or issues like that, and that we won't have to come back on this issue.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion?
And Mr. Chairman, I think I objected and I removed my objection.
Objection has been moved. What is the wish of the committee?
It's from committee, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry?
We did it.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're going to move and need a motion to do that, to move out. So we're going to move House Bill 100 from committee. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker and Mr. Bullock. And thank you very much for your presentation. We'll take a brief recess.
House Resources will come back to order at 1:19, and we're playing little musical chairs here with the chair today, but we will not sing again. What we have on our agenda now is House Bill 128, Alaska Wild Salmon Day, and I wonder if our esteemed visitor here could come forward and give us a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to come forward with House Bill 128. For the record, my name is Bryce Edgman. I represent House District 36-37, I guess it is these days. House Bill 128 before you really is described in its title, and that is an act that would create a day that we as Alaskans could celebrate Alaska Wild Salmon by the creation of Alaska Wild Salmon Day on August 10th. And, you know, it almost seems a little humorous that I'm coming before a legislative committee in Alaska, you know, exclaiming the virtues of Alaska salmon. What this bill does create, assuming that it gets passed, is an opportunity for all Alaskans to have one day out of the year set aside to celebrate salmon from any standpoint that they so desire. In researching the bill, we also came to discover that the creation of a Wild Salmon Day also would offer those in the tourism industry and those that are marketers of all things Alaska really an opportunity to have that cachet of having Wild Salmon Day. And so in putting the bill together, we worked with folks in the tourist industry. I've got a long list of names here. Alaska Airlines, United Fishermen of Alaska, Alaska Seafood Marketing Association. I think we had correspondence with Alaska Travel Industry Association. Those in the restaurants and tourism sectors, small and medium and large businesses as well. And we ended up selecting August 10th, Mr. Co-Chair, because it was a day that, number one, was unoccupied by any other Alaska day. And number two, it wasn't in the month of July, which seemed to be stacked with everything from Alaska Flag Day, the Day of Prayer, Women's Veterans Day, Harbor Remembrance Day, and a number of other lists, as well as honoring a number of legendary Alaska figures. So that, in just a couple of minutes of description, Mr. Co-Chair, is what the bill is about, and I would certainly be willing to answer any questions if there were any.
Thank you very much. Representative Herron.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. Is Representative Edgen, we don't get to sing your birthday during session. Is August 10th your birthday?
Well, for today's purposes, it might be. No, it is not my birthday, and you're not the first person to ask that either, but August 10th is a day that was, again, not in statute as any other Alaska day, so it's a pretty arbitrary date, really. And we did talk with the folks at Alaska Airlines and others. They seem to think that was August 10th was still during the height of the tourist season and would still, you know, would be pretty appropriate for having a day set aside for those coming into the state as tourists as well as the rest of us as Alaskans to celebrate Alaska Salmon Day.
Representative?
Yes, and the second one is, would you support the amendment that UFA has offered to change CHUM to KETA?
I haven't seen that amendment.
No, I mean, it's in their letter.
Through the chair, Representative Herron, it's my understanding, and I would certainly not say anything definitive on it here at the table, but it's my understanding that CHUM is the more accepted term, I would defer to the committee's will on that, but, somebody who's grown up as a lifelong consumer of salmon and a fisherman for many, many years, both commercial and sports fishermen, that, most people know dog salmon, if you will, as CHUM salmon.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate you taking the time out to come and make a presentation for us. And we're going to open public testimony on HB 128. And I want to know if do we have any public testimony from the LIO for 128 or anything off net? No. Okay. And I don't see anyone signed in for public testimony, but I would like to make that offer for people in the rooms. Anyone like to testify on HB 128? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Appreciate the sponsor being here today, and I would like to entertain a motion to move HB 128 from committee. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Under committee discussion.
Committee discussion.
I'm just not sure that the date is right. We had 2 weeks ago, 359 kings were caught in Homer on the tournament. So I'm thinking that, February date might be better. So just a comment, salmon are not only ubiquitous around Alaska, but they're very valued by everyone. And so I support the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Herron.
Yes, under committee discussion, I will concur, is salmon is our way of life. And I think it's a great honor that we recognize wild salmon.
And Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very supportive of the bill. I think the day is okay. I just want to know if there's going to be a Wild Alaska Salmon Day song coming out to help celebrate this.
Well, through the co-chair, Representative Tarr, I will work with the co-chair on that.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Representative Nagia. Even as far north as I'm from Barrow, we do get a lot of salmon now, so it's appropriate that we celebrate on that day. I'll probably go check mine at that day, too. Thank you.
I would still entertain a motion to move HB 128 from committee.
Mr.
Representative Seaton.
I'd move House Bill 128 29LS05-63-W from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, House Bill 128 will move from committee.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Get right in those lyrics.
Yeah.
We'll take a brief at ease to sign the document.
Resource Committee back to order at 1:30 p.m. Our next agenda item are some confirmation hearings that we're having for the Board of Game. And I do believe that we have Teresa Sager Alba on the phone. Teresa, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we certainly can. Could you please identify yourself for the record and give us kind of a brief bio, and we'll see if the committee has any questions for you.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and this is just a couple of minutes, if that's okay. Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Teresa Sager Alba. By way of my personal background, I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born and raised in Fairbanks, and I moved to the Tok Cutoff near Mentasta Pass in 1984. My husband Bill and I live in a dry log cabin on 5 acres. We cut firewood, we haul water, and we keep up with the news and events through radio and internet. We do not have network or satellite television. I was raised in a hunting and fishing family with 5 brothers and sisters. We spent every summer and fall at our family cabin and really developed strong ties to the outdoors. We were taught an appreciation for harvesting wild fish and game for food, and over time I grew to understand how much these endeavors also really enriched our family life. When I think back on the best or the most important times in our lives, the common thread that runs through all those experiences was hunting and fishing, and actually it still is what draws us together. And I'm glad to have the opportunity now to share those traditions with the younger members of our family. Bear with me here just one moment. Bill and I spend a good share of our time hunting, fishing, and trapping, and we fill our freezer each year with red salmon from a fish wheel on the Copper River, and also with moose, grouse, ptarmigan, ducks, sometimes adult sheep, wild berries. And we also have 2 greenhouses and raise a garden each year. In terms of my professional background and what I do for a living, I work for my neighbor who runs a consulting company that designs and manages community improvement construction projects in the rural areas of Alaska. And prior to this position, I worked for the state legislature for members of the Interior Delegation, which is where I gained some experience with the statutory and regulatory processes. I do not offer a professional background or formal education in wildlife management, and I don't have any business or commercial ties to wildlife. And that's not to say that those pursuits are not of important value, because they certainly are, but the board has other members who bring those backgrounds and perspectives to the table. I only mention this so that the committee understands that my contribution to the Board of Game has been primarily from the perspective and the position of a resident Alaskan and one who has lived in both urban and rural environments. I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to have served on the board for the past 6 years, and I'd like to thank each of you for listening to this introduction. I sincerely appreciate your consideration of my reappointment to this position. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Alba. Does the committee have any questions?
Yes.
Representative Josephson and then Representative Herron.
Thank you. Ms. Alba, it's Representative Josephson. The only data that I've seen on the subject of visitors to Denali National Park that have been able to see wolves is that in 2010, 44% were able to see them, and now 4% are able to see them. Is that a consideration in your mind that the Board of Game should keep in mind when they're making decisions about things like buffer zones?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, I think that is certainly a consideration. It's one of many, and I would say that in consideration on that issue, what I have tried to keep in mind is the broader, I should say the additional considerations that allow the visitors to our state to observe and to experience what, I would say what the real Alaska has to offer. Sometimes that involves abundant wildlife, where lots of animals can be seen from a vehicle or a bus, and sometimes that means that wildlife is not abundant and is not available to view. And I think the reduction in the viewability that you mentioned in that percentage, that's a case in point. And I don't know if that answers your question, but that's, I guess, the perspective that I try to give to that issue.
Good. If I may follow up?
Yes. Your resume refers to something called Slant Alaskans United. And I'm just curious, I took a look on the internet, but can you explain what that is? Or Slant Alaskans Unite?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Josephson. I do not serve on their board any longer, but I am a member of the organization. And Slant Alaskans Unite was formed back when all of the national parks, well, not all, but when the parks and preserves that were created under ANILCA went into effect. And there were chapters of Alaskans Unite all over the state. Slant Alaskans Unite was one of many, and basically they were citizen organizations that were formed to protect the current uses at the time, what were the current uses and enjoyment of Alaska's lands that were being drawn into park and wilderness regulations. And Slant Alaskans Unite, I believe, is the only remaining chapter in existence in the state. And we continue to try to basically watchdog the regulations and the activities of the Park Service and its impact that it has on Alaskans and on people who use those lands.
Can I try one more?
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this, Ms. Alba. I know you've served, and I appreciate your service, but I haven't spoken to you before. There's an article from 2 years ago on this buffer zone issue, and first I'll let you know that I'd be the first to say that the press, being fallible, they could be wrong about what they wrote, but if I could read just this one sentence. It says, quote, "She supported removing the buffer because in her view the state shouldn't be managing its lands to meet a federal purpose," close quote. And I guess my question is, can you ever see a circumstance where a state purpose and a federal purpose might be the same in a given area?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, there are probably instances where the state and federal purposes are aligned in various areas of the state.
Okay. All right. Representative Herron?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Teresa, could you share, you've served on for 6 years now, a two-part question. What has surprised you and what has disappointed you in all those years of serving on the Board of Game?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Herron. Let's see. I knew I would get a ringer question that I might not have been prepared for. I would say probably one of the greatest disappointments is what I see to be a lack of this is certainly not directed at you or at members of the legislature, but I would very much like to see greater support for the advisory committee system, because it's so broad and expansive across the state, and because I personally feel it's so valuable to the board process. And advisory committees are limited in their travel expenses and in the number of meetings that they can hold. I think they're a very strong, important advisory system to the Board of Game, and I just think it's unfortunate when they are not able to have the full measure of participation and advice to the boards that that I think they would like to have and that they would have if their support base was a little bit greater or significantly greater than it is now. I understand that that the budget constraints that we're under in Alaska right now are significant, and the legislature has to really struggle with that. But just in terms of a significant disappointment that I've witnessed over the past 6 years, I would say that's a primary one. As far as what has been the greatest surprise to me, I don't know if this answer is specific enough or is what you're looking for, but I will say that the number of proposals that are submitted to the board and the amount of time that the board has to process and deal with all of the proposals, that did surprise me, particularly when I first got on the board, because it's a lot to deal with in a short amount of time. My first meeting was in 2009, and we had, I believe we met, we did deliberations for about 10 or 11 days, and we had 243 proposals. It was really an intense schedule, and that certainly took some getting accustomed to for me. I guess I had not anticipated when I first got on the board that the intensity would be as significant as it was. It's remains a challenge for me, but I do appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions from the committee? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Alba, I just wanted to go back to the comment about the state and federal purpose. I guess, are you, at this time, could you just elaborate a little bit more on the relationship between sort of the state and the federal government and game management?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Tarr. Currently, I would say that the relationship between the state and the federal government is rather rocky, and from my perspective, that is particularly the case because of a lot of issues of what are being referenced as federal overreach, and I look specifically at the provisions of ANILCA, which were protections that were basically guaranteed to Alaskans when a lot of the federal lands were established. And I think that currently, and in the last few years in particular, we've seen a lot of moves and maneuvers by the federal side that basically sidestep or that abandon some of the provisions of ANILCA, and I think that's unfortunate. And so I'm very, I guess, protective of state interests in that respect, and I'm concerned about that. That seems to be the trajectory of the federal presence in Alaska right now.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you have some specific examples, I think that could just be educational from your experience on the Board of Game and what you're seeing. So I'd appreciate if you could do it by email if you want to comment today, but just sharing a little bit more about that, because I just feel like I could benefit. I'd be happy to share with the members of the committee. But my second question is, wondering if you've been following a bill that we're going to consider this evening to raise hunting and fishing license fees, and looking at resident versus non-resident, and in consideration of the federal funds that are available for that 3-to-1 match. And if you have any comments on that, or think that's the right way to go.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Tarr. Yes, I'll be glad to send you an email with regard to the state-federal issues, and also a copy of the letter that the Board of Game recently sent. And with regard to your second question, I apologize. Could you repeat that, the second part?
With permission from the chair?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're considering House Bill 137 to increase the hunting and fishing license fees for both residents and non-residents, more on the non-resident side of things, and that seems to be supported by many of the leading organizations in the hunting and guiding community. Just wondered if you had any comments on that legislation or just the sort of concept of increasing these fees at this time and not losing out on the federal dollars that come through the Pittman-Robertson funds.
Yes, Representative Tarr, and I apologize that I drew a blank. Yes, I'm familiar with the legislation generally, although I don't have it in front of me, and I don't recall all the specific provisions. But I would say that my recommendation, and this is my personal recommendation, certainly not on behalf of the entire Board of Game, but I do think that it is advisable to revisit the license fees, and particularly considering increases for non-residents. I also do think that the time is probably right for considering resident license fee increases, because it's been so long since that has been considered, and I would urge the legislature to look at a license fee increase that would be significant enough so that thinking into the future, my experience has been that these increases are few and far between, and so planning ahead and looking toward inflation and so forth, it would be important to try to find a good balance between an increase that that helps to make up the management dollar shortfalls, not just at the present time, but years into the future, because the likelihood is that it probably wouldn't be revisited again for a number of years, I think it's safe to say. And I would also urge the legislature to move cautiously with regard to establishing resident tag fees, because a lot of those are directly tied to the harvest of animals that are basically harvested for food. And while Alaskans are looking for food security, and the economy being what it is, I would just urge caution in adopting tag fees for residents. I think if you considered any, it would be my recommendation that you look toward the species that are often considered to be trophy species, such as doll sheep, brown bears, and in draw areas in particular, because those are the more highly coveted harvest opportunities, primarily for trophy purposes, although not exclusively. And I think that residents would be more inclined and would probably be willing and would desire to pay for resident tags for those species. There's probably a couple of other recommendations I could make, and I'd be glad to do that, but I don't want to take up too much of the committee's time, so it's certainly your call if you'd like me to continue on that.
Thank you. My questions have been answered. You know, that's a broad assessment of what we've been considering. And if you have additional thoughts, perhaps, yeah, we could share them through the committee chair while we're all still considering that legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Elder, I do have one more question. There was a story, once again, because I can't be everywhere, so I got to rely on someone else. In the paper just a week ago today about the proposal to prohibit traps and snares within 200 feet of trails on the Kenai Peninsula, and you indicated that your belief was that, if I understand this quote, it was your view that people walking their dogs should just have them on a leash at all times, essentially, because it was sort of their problem. Is that a fair summary of your position?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that is pretty close. It sounds a bit harsh, but the bottom line is that I think the problem that was brought to the board was outlined for us and was a situation where pet owners and individuals who had encountered problems with traps that had their pets off leash, and they were not conforming to leash laws or not controlling their pets and animals. And so, yes, I mean, in that respect, that's a fair characterization of the statement that I believe I made during the deliberations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the committee? All right, thank you very much, Ms. Alba. If you can hang online here for a little while, I'll remind everyone online, we are going to take public testimony on both of these appointees. We have Mr. Fanning online. I'd like to go ahead and, Mr. Fanning, if you're there, maybe you could introduce yourself and give us a brief description of why you'd like to serve on the board. And for those of you online, we will move to public testimony as soon as we're completed with this process. Mr. Fanning?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Yeah, my name's Kip Fanning. I was born in Fairbanks and raised in Yakutat. With that said, I was born into a commercial guiding family and then living in Yakutat, growing up with a subsistence lifestyle. So I got a pretty good realm on both sides there. And with that background, I've had a lifetime of being around the industry and in it, and would like to do what I can to help preserve it for the future generations.
All right. Well, thank you. Anything else you'd like to tell us before we move to questions?
No, that's probably good. It sounds like we got quite a few questions here, so
okay.
What I can do.
Thank you, Mr. Fanning. The committee have any questions for Mr. Fanning?
Sure.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fanning, there are people, I would submit, Mr. Fanning, in the state that feel that the board needs a non-consumptive perspective, non-consumptive user perspective. Is that something you'd be willing to provide? And I'm not asking you is, will you vote in that sort of, from that perspective in some reliable way, but are you willing to listen to people who want watchable wildlife?
Well, certainly. I pride myself on listening to everybody's opinion and trying to make the best decision that's in front of us. The state, you know, obviously moose hunting, that feeds a lot of families. Caribou hunting, sheep hunting, all that. But there's also the side of people that they want to go somewhere and see these animals without seeing them being shot, hunted or trapped or whatever. And I don't have a problem with that, but you know, there needs to be a balance, and everybody needs to understand that a lot of people survive off of that food. If they want to go see them, maybe don't go see them during hunting season. Go see them some other time. But there definitely needs to be a balance, and I have no problem listening to everybody's side and doing what I can to try to preserve everybody's needs.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fanning, just wanted to understand a little bit more. I noticed on your application you were interested in Aviation Advisory Board, Board of Game, or the Permanent Fund Corporation. Pretty diverse group there in your, you know, sort of boards of interest. And so it looks like the selection here on the Board of Game was one of those three. But do you have previous sort of board experience? You know, sort of coming into, as what was described by the previous appointee, you know, is a pretty complex process with hundreds of proposals, and just wondering if you can sort of give a little bit more on your background there.
I do not have any other previous experience with boards, and I would just like to say, you know, I'll do what I can to do the best job I can and to keep an open mind and ask everybody a lot of questions and try to make the best decisions I can.
Follow up?
And I guess then if you were, you know, just looking at the group of boards you submitted your name for, was number two Board of Game as priority, it was your number two selection, and the Aviation Advisory Board would have actually been the first one, or you have equal interest in any of the three you had listed there?
No, I have equal interest in any of the three. I put in for Board of Game first, But I also enjoy aviation. I've been in that my whole life as well, and so I put in for that one as well. The permanent fund one, I was just looking at different ones. That's not as much of an interest to me as aviation or board games.
Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, I'd like to open public comment on both these two potential appointees, Ms. Alba and Mr. Fanning. And if we can go off net to Gary Stevens. Mr. Stevens, are you there, and can you provide us some public testimony for these two folks?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gary Stevens. I live in Chugiak. I've lived in Alaska for almost 45 years. I do enjoy hunting, fishing. I'm also a photographer. I photograph wildlife in Denali Park, formerly McKinley Park, since the late 70s. And as far as wolves are concerned, I've not seen any more back then than you do today. So I think that's a cyclic thing as much as anything. But basically, I'm on the board of directors for the Alaska Outdoor Council, and we do strongly support reconfirmation for Teresa Sager-Alba. I don't know if any of the members of the committee have ever been at a board of game meeting, one of the public meetings, but I started doing it about four or five years ago now, going regularly, and in my opinion, she's probably the most respected person on the board from a broad base of Alaskan users. She is extremely intelligent. She's very, very aware of a lot of the things that affect all of the things that they deal with. You might also talk to the legal counsel for the Board of Game and get their opinions of her. She is on top of a lot of things, and we really would like to keep her on there. As far as Kip Fanning, unfortunately, I've not met the man yet. I do know his dad on a very minimal basis. Have a lot of respect for him, and I think that we would also support his confirmation based purely on the fact that he lives the lifestyle that Alaska Outdoor Council is all about. Our members like to do that stuff. So anyway, I think that's probably enough. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to talk to you.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Mr. Stevens. We appreciate that. And now, if we can go to the Fairbanks LIO and Al Barrett. Mr. Barrett, are you available?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
I certainly can, sir. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Al Barrett. For the record, I reside in Fairbanks. I've participated in the Board of Game process and the AC process for many years now. I would appreciate the legislature approving Teresa Sager-Albaugh's reconfirmation to the Board of Game. She's a subsistence user. She protects the subsistence way of life and the priority. She's well-educated pertaining to wildlife management. She's well-prepared for each board meeting. She attends AC meetings, you know, Fairbanks, Glen Allen, Tok, Mat-Su, Anchorage, which not all members do or have that ability to visit and just listen to issues that the ACs take up. Sometimes we struggle with antlerless moose, or we're talking about sheep. So not only is she just reading our proposals or our suggestions or our comments, she's also attending these meetings and getting that feel when you go to a public meeting of how Fairbanks or Mat-Su or Glen Allen people are, you know, discussing and coming up with these comments to give to the Board of Game. She does have a background, or she has a great background using the codified finding statutes and regulations, and educating herself with the interpretations of those statutes and regulations. And again, if, like Gary had mentioned, you know, if you get to a Board of Game meeting, you'll see she'll have that book cracked open, and she'll ask very pertinent and very important questions, you know, either to staff or Department of Law or to other board members. getting them to think about, you know, a really good regulation. You know, we need to make regulations, so let's make the best one we can. And she's very, very good at that and speaks really well at these meetings. And you always learn something listening when she's speaking. She has a very good knowledge base of statutory regulations, and she's very informed on statewide issues. She at breaks discusses, she's very acceptable to the public in answering, you know, during breaks of a board game meeting, listening to your issues, discussing your issues with you, and getting a complete understanding before, you know, an actual vote takes place in deliberations. And I think this is very important for all Alaskans and all visitors to Alaska, be it that they're hunting or coming up here to visit and view wildlife. I see my time's just about up, so thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, Mr. Representative Tarr.
Thank you. Mr. Barrett, did you have comments about the second individual under consideration today?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I support Kip Fanning only based on what I know and just listening to him speak. And I think, you know, if we go on what he said and he's going to listen to all viewers, consumptive and non-consumptive, and educate himself, it's a huge process. But it seems like this man is willing to take that task, and he has the time to do it. I think his background proves that he can do something like that, and I'm also in support of him. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brett. Any other questions for Mr. Brett? Thank you for your testimony. We also have at the Fairbanks LIO Mike Tinker. Mr. Tinker, are you there?
I am, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Tinker. If you could identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
I would. My name is Mike Tinker. I live in Esther, Alaska. And I'm speaking this afternoon on behalf of the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association.
Thank you, Mr. Tinker. Please.
Some direction. Would you like me to touch on both of these candidates in my testimony?
You're certainly welcome to do that.
All right. Thank you. The Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association is a 35-year-old organization based in the interior that works on resource issues, especially fish and game. I personally have worked with the Board of Game for 25 years, representing the Fairbanks Advisory Committee, the AWCA, and my family. I'm here to ask you to support Teresa Sager-Albach for confirmation for another term on the Board of Game. Throughout her service on the board, Ms. Sager-Albach has been a caretaker of the constitutional and statutory obligations the board should, but does not always follow. She comes prepared for every agenda, usually having had several meetings with the public and advisory committees. She's read the hundreds of pages of information that are required for each meeting. She has lived in more in the more urban Alaska environment in Fairbanks, but now lives in the and has lived for many years in the bush. Her experience gives her a unique perspective. Her background as a hunter and fisher living in a subsistence area give her the experience to understand and appreciate the passion of those coming before the board. Her calm attention to detail amid the emotion and turmoil that accompany some issues before the board is not matched by any other member. She brings the perspective following the statutes and procedures and not leaving those guidelines during heated debates or questions and answer session. She is the board member who is looking out for compliance to the process, regulations, and contradictions in purpose. Now, we want to thank Governor Walker for discussing her reappointment with the AWCA and then making that appointment. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to support her. With regard to Mr. Fanning, we asked you to recommend the confirmation for Mr. Fanning as a member of the game. As a newcomer to the regulatory process, Mr. Fanning fits the intent of the Alaska statesmen and women who drafted the sideboards for Board of Game members. They did not intend the boards of fish and game to be made up of hunting and fishing experts or professionals. The language is clear that an applicant for the board should be knowledgeable and have experience with hunting, habitat, and issues that provide a base for making informed decisions on hunting and trapping regulatory matters. The implication of those guidelines is that the relatively short term of service is an opportunity to select new members with new questions and new ideas. The AWCA finds that Kip Fanning has exactly the qualifications needed. His life experience and professional experience have given him a detailed background to understand wildlife issues and make good conservation decisions. He's not a registered guide, but as he said, has worked with hunters his entire life. Mr. Fanning recognizes the steep learning curve that lies ahead of him moving into the regulatory decision-making arena. He's up to that challenge. We believe his common sense, experience, living in a subsistence-oriented coastal community will serve him well as a member of the board of game. And we thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Tinker. Does the committee have any questions for Mr. Tinker? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Tinker. And recognize that we've been joined by Representative Culver. And if we can move, I believe we're off net, next to James Kowalski. James, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, we can hear you, James. Please identify
yourself. I can barely hear you.
Okay, please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
And I heard my first name and then I got a beep, so I didn't hear the last name. So I hope I'm the James you expect.
Just
Kowalski, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, my name is James Kowalski. I'm with Allentown Hot Spring Road outside of Fairbanks. I'm a 45-year resident. And I thank the committee for giving me a few minutes to testify. And my testimony hopefully will be clear and simple. And none of it is personal. But I would like the committee to understand and realize this population is not represented by the existing board of game nor by the new electee, Mr. Fanning. We have a large segment of this population are non-consumptive users. And over the decades, pretty much starting with Governor Murkowski, we've seen a game board that does not, by its makeup, and in my opinion, by its decisions, represent the larger Alaska public. And saying that, I'm just going to urge you to start to consider the possibility that this board should have a broader representation, regardless of the skills of individual members. And of course, I've heard quite a bit because I've been listening about Teresa. And again, it's not personal, but it is fair to consider to think about the fact that the larger segment of this population, frankly, are not hunters nor fishers. Well, they may be fishers, but not hunters and not trappers. And I think it is only fair to consider the possibility that there should be that kind of representation also on this board. So having said that, I'm going to ask you to consider that I'm representing myself here, that I am opposed to both the reappointment and the new nomination. Now, Mr. Fanning, I don't know. I knew his father well in the 1970s. As I said, I'm a longtime resident of the state. I do pay attention to what goes on. So I hope you will consider my thoughts and my testimony before you act. And that's the end of my statement.
Thank you, Mr. Kowalski. Well,
thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Kowalski. Any questions from the committee? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your comments and the interest, Mr. Kowalski, in having a broad, representation on the board. And I'm just wondering if you could sort of discuss your participation with the board. Do you have a personal experience where you submitted a proposal or tried to make comments that you feel would reflect a different user group and they were not well received? Or if you could comment and give us a little more insight into your own experience.
Well, sure, I'll try. Paying attention to, as a board member, considering or listening to all sides is well and good, then we would expect that. But it's not representation. My experience with the board of game goes to my seventh years as Wildlife and Parks Director for Tanna Chiefs Conference. I'm not representing them in any way now, but I did attend essentially 7 years of board meetings. So I paid close attention to how the board functions. It was some time ago, however, but I do feel, if I may say this, that my plea to consider that we have a large segment of this Alaska population who are not represented. They may be listened to, their thoughts may be considered, but it's not the same as representation. So I please want you to factor that into how you consider the future of the Board of Game. That is my answer. I hope it's, I hope it reveals something of what you seek.
Thank you. Representative Tarr?
And just one more follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If a different individual were appointed, it's likely that that individual, you know, based on what we know of different board members' positions, would still be outvoted, I guess, if there were one sort of non-consumptive user. But you feel like that would be a different form or a more effective form of representation than having the ability to participate as a public member? Or participate as a member of the public in by attending meetings or having the opportunity to submit proposals that, for consideration?
No, I can barely hear you. You sound like a tiny voice through a keyhole. I'm sure it's not worthwhile. I'm not sure I understand the question because I didn't quite hear it all.
Try it again. Can you hear us better now?
I can hear a little bit better, yes.
I'm just wondering if one of the members on the board were a non-consumptive user, they would still likely have a minority position, but do you feel like that would be a more effective form of representation for that user group as in comparison to the alternative as it exists today, where you could submit a proposal for consideration by the board and be an attendee and provide public comments?
Well, it would be better than what we have now. And again, I urge everyone to consider these are not personal comments, but it would certainly be closer to a representation of the state of Alaska. Now, in very general terms, I understand basically 80% of our population voting and otherwise do not hunt or fish. Hunt or trap. And we have about a 15% representation for a very large public. So I guess I'm not particularly answering your question. I'm not specific enough, so I apologize for that. But I'm looking for a representation which is truly a representation of the broader public, and I don't feel the board does that. As much as they may think they try, I'm an onlooker, I pay attention, I've been around for a long time, I don't see it.
Okay, thank you.
And I don't think the two appointments that you're considering today make any progress in that direction.
Thank you.
Any other
You're welcome.
Questions?
Thank you for listening to me.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Kowalski. Do we have anyone else online at all? No, we don't. So we will go to the folks here in the room for us, and we do have someone signed up for Stacy. Mr. Stacy, would you come forward, please, and provide us your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Thor Stacy. I'm here representing the Alaska Professional Hunters Association, Alaska's hunting guides. Allocation of the game resource here in Alaska is of critical importance to a resource-based visitor industry such as ours. We support both appointments. I personally have had the good fortune to watch maybe over 100 hours of deliberation from Member Sager Alabaugh, and I think she brings a good perspective to the Board of Game. I was very diligent in her preparations and very conscientious in the comments she puts on the record, building a good record. I will say that she's definitely not a guide industry vote. I think if you looked at the voting record, her record on issues that we support or oppose would not be very much in line. But that being said, a good record and deliberative process is good for the state as a whole. And those kinds of preparations or well-thought-out comments make this institution that Alaska has, Alaska should be very proud of this institution. And it makes it a better process. Our support for Mr. Kip Fanning is very general. Full disclosure, I think his father was a president of our association at one point. He has no ties to any person in our association at this point that I know of or that I'm aware of. But he brings a perspective to the board as a small business owner that we think is valuable. There's two questions, you know, conservation and allocation. You look at conservation concerns and allocation concerns. You have to draft regulations to address those. And sometimes how those regulations are drafted, just how they're administratively acted upon, have inadvertent effects on small business. And someone with a small business background can understand that maybe there's two ways to get to the same result as far as the resource goes, but one way is less burdensome on small business while accomplishing the same conservation goal. So that's a perspective that we see as valuable.
Thank you, Mr. Stacey. Anyone have any questions for Mr. Stacey? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, some of the organizational support for the second individual under consideration, and this is not just a reflection on him at all, but just so I understand a little better, it's been more general support. People have less experience with this individual. If an individual like that is appointed and then, you know, through the meetings, there's a series of sort of questionable decisions or positions on things that were unexpected, how would your organization respond to that?
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, that's an excellent question. I think that you can't, if you have respect for the process, you have to be careful that you take issues with votes. But you can certainly take issues with a bias or something that where they're going outside of the formal process or their positions come from an activist position. They're seeking an appointment to a board such as this with the goal change, you know, with a predetermined bias, let's just say, that's you can't communicate to. So I think that it all depends on how those votes happen, and if you feel that the process is being respected, not so much a win or loss column on votes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Stacey? Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it.
Thank you,
is there anyone else here in the room that would like to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony for these two folks, and I'd like to know, open this up for committee comments. Any comments from the committee?
Well, yes. I'll just
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. I mean, I'll be not fully candid, but somewhat candid. I think Ms. Albaugh sounds like she's very knowledgeable without having the sort of academic experience, but she's a good example of how you don't need that. And so I think she's clearly capable in that regard. But I do find the board generally, I mean, in fairness to Ms. Albaugh, the decision I asked her about involving trails in the Kenai was a 7-0 decision. So, you know, there's a lot going on there. But I don't know that there is a constituency that is so seriously underrepresented as there is relative to the Board of Game. I can't think of anything in government like it. And so I'm concerned about it. But those would be my only comments.
Thank you. Any other comments? Well, seeing none, I would like to entertain a motion to move these two nominees forward to a joint session for confirmation, which will be held at a later date. And just to remind everyone that's listening and the committee that your signing of a document today neither confirms support nor opposition to either of the candidates. All that does is really confirms that we have held the hearing and that those names would be going forward. And so you are not committed to any type of vote until, of course, we get to confirmation.
Mr. Chairman, the Resource Committee has reviewed the qualification of the governor's appointees as shown in the attached referral and confirmation forms. The recommendations that names be forwarded to the joint session for consideration.
Thank you very much. Any objection to that? Seeing none. That moves forward, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the report. We'll
come back on record at 2:22 or thereabouts without new glasses. And we don't have anything else on our agenda today. I want to remind the committee that we do have public testimony tonight from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on House Bill 137. And I'd like to know, does the committee have any comments or anything they'd like to say before we adjourn? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've announced public testimony. Are we also taking amendments to that bill tonight?
Representative Seaton, we will have a couple of amendments for that bill tonight.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
May I? Representative Joseph?
Do you mean amendments to the amendments, or that there will be two amendments offered?
There'll be two amendments offered. I see. Tonight. Yes. Yeah. Representative Nagia.
I'd like to be excused. I don't know what time my wife's going to be coming in. Between 6 and 8, I think, somewhere. So.
Okay. We make note of that. Yeah.
No, thank you.
We make note of that, and we're glad she's coming back to town.
Keep me in shape.
Anything else that the committee would like to discuss? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much for your time today, and we will adjourn at 2:24. We're adjourned.
You want me to do all of them?
Oh, just the chairs and the witnesses.
Okay.
Testifier 1.
Yep.
Testifier 2.
Yep.
And this is the chair mic, 1-2.
Yep.
Great.
Okay, so. I'd like to call a meeting of the House Resource Committee to order at 6:10 p.m. We're in room 124. Today is Wednesday, March the 25th, 2015. And our members present are Representative Johnson, Representative Josephson, Representative Heron, Representative Tarr, Representative Olson, our Vice Chair, Representative Hawker, and I'm Co-Chair, Representative Tallarico. Representative Nagiak is excused. I'd like to let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. I'd also like to recognize our staff. Julie Kohler is our recording secretary. Alex Beebe Judiche is our teleconference aide. And Representative Seaton is also here present with us. Our committee aide is Gary Zepp from Representative Nagiak's office back there, and Julie Morris from my office up here in the corner. If you need anything during this meeting, please get their attention and they will assist you. I'd like to ask you to please turn your cell phones off during the meeting. Thank you very much. And we are taking up the committee substitute for House Bill 137. That would be version N. And so what I would like to do is we're going to start with our public testimony.
Off-net.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. All right. Okay, thank you very much. And I think what we will do is we'll go to the Kenai LIO and Ted Wellman. Mr. Wellman, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wellman. If you could please identify yourself and give us your testimony. We're going to take testimony for about 2 to 3 minutes.
All right, thank you. My name is Ted Wellman. I'm the president of the Kenai River Special Management Area Advisory Board. The advisory board supports the adoption of a sockeye salmon stamp for inclusion in House Bill 137. The advisory board is a statutorily created board that includes state and federal agencies and non-voting members, as well as the cities of Kenai, Soldada, and the Kenai Peninsula Borough. The proposal for user staff has been under consideration by the Charisma Board for many years. The Kenai River Special Comprehensive Management Plan, adopted in December of 1997, contains such a recommendation. Since 1997, the river use has grown exponentially, both on the boat traffic and on bank use. The primary reason for the increased use is the growing harvest of sockeye salmon, which imposes significant burden on enforcement agencies and stresses the environment habitat throughout the entire system. Accordingly, the Kenai CURSWA board identified the adoption of a sockeye salmon stamp this year as a priority to provide adequate resources to handle the burden imposed by this sockeye salmon fishery. Because the matter has arisen rather sooner than the board had anticipated, we've had no opportunity to look at the details of adopting a sockeye salmon stamp. However, the proposal that has been supported before in testimony talking about making a Kenai a sockeye salmon stamp be much like the King salmon stamp with the same rates and same conditions appears to serve our objectives as long as the money generated is returned to the river and its uses are not unduly restricted on the agencies so we can actually protect the habitat and hire adequate enforcement to deal with the many flagrant violations of regulations that occurs during the salmon sockeye salmon fishery. That is all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Wellman. Any questions from the committee? Representative Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you just please restate the name of the organization that you're a part of?
Yes, it's the Kenai River Special Management Area, and it's the advisory board. When they created the park, they created in statute an advisory board, in which I serve as the president of that board presently. And our mission under the legislation was to advise state and federal agencies and municipalities and the legislature on issues affecting the Kenai River. And this is an important issue that we feel very strongly about.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying. If I could ask you something just sort of fundamental so I can have an illustration of this. So if, for example, someone left Anchorage in early July for the second run of sockeye, and it was a 3 sockeye per day limit, they would pay what in your mind? How would that work?
They would pay the resident. Of course, they would have to have a fishing license, but they pay the resident stamp, which I think is
$20
for the stamp, much like they would if they were fishing for king salmon, but they would be fishing for sockeye salmon instead. Incidentally, we find that much of our traffic on the river does come from Anchorage, and people will make multiple trips during the season. It's very seldom that they would ever make a 3-day trip, so it's most likely to be something they do several times during the year.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Robin. We appreciate it. And if we could go to Joe Connors. Joe, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. My name is Joe Connors. I've lived on the Kenai for 40 years in Sterling. I'm also a member of the CURSWA, but I'm not speaking as a member of the CURSWA. I'm speaking as a person who has a lodge and a guide service on the Kenai River and has for over 35 years. I would like to speak to the entire House Bill 137 and say that it's about time we adjust our fees for the various fish and game activities that we provide. But I'd like to speak especially to the inclusion of a sockeye salmon stamp and model it after the king salmon stamp. You've got a model. You've got the different 1-day, 3-day, 7-day, 14-day annual. And that's for our non-residents, and then a resident just buys a king salmon stamp like they buy a fishing license. And that's good for the entire season. I have to echo what Ted said. In the Middle River where I live, it's an incredible increase of use. And that puts a lot of burden on the resource owners, the Department of Natural Resources, the various federal agencies. We find just people everywhere, places that 5 years ago they never would have been. They just keep coming into our area, and it's certainly reasonable to expect them to pay some money so that we can take care of the habitat, take care of the infrastructure, have enforcement. So I would seriously recommend this, And at this point, the details haven't been worked out as to how the funding would get from basically Fish and Game to DNR. And I think you've got managers that can work that out. I think we've got examples where that has worked out in the past. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Connors. Any questions for Mr. Connors? Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Connors. And now I'd like to go off-net to Mitch Falk. Mitch, are you there? No? He's gone. Okay. All right. Well, how about off-net to Gordon Carlson? Are you there?
My name is Gordon Carlson from Cantwell. I'm in support of possibly raising the hunting license and the fishing license fee. I am against doing raising or putting a price on tags as far as where moose or caribou is concerned because of those of what people rely on for food. I might be able to understand raising or putting a price on maybe like sheep, musk ox, buffalo, stuff of that nature that are more of a sport hunt versus more of a somebody that's hunting for sustaining themselves. I think we need to possibly raise the fees on people that come to Alaska, they're non-resident hunting for their fee tags because they're doing it more as a sport, not so much as relying on the meat as a food source. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Are there any questions for Mr. Carlson? Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Carlson. And if we could go to Robert Fithian.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Tallarico and House Resources Committee members. My name is Robert Fithian. I live in Lower Tontina, Alaska. I've been actively involved in Alaska's mineral forestry professional guide and ag industries for many years. I'm currently serving my third term in the White House Creative Wildlife and Hunting Heritage Conservation Council, where I represent the United States relative to the guide and outfitter and tourism industries as they pertain to hunting. I also continue to serve by numerous governor appointments to the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park Subsistence Resource Commission. Please know that I'm in full support of HB 137 in its original text. I haven't seen any markups or substitutes, but I understand there are existing amendments. And the one in particular that I do not support, which I have heard about, that increases non-resident big game tags by 100%. This amount of increase will without question impact my family's long-time established professional guide service in which we strive to conduct long-term quality wilderness multiple species safari style hunts. Our current non-resident hunters spend $2,000 on licensing. This 100% amendment would require them to spend $4,000, which will in fact negatively impact our ability to book hunters and compete with the costs where they can achieve comparable hunts at lower rates with better quality provisions in other countries. As we provide our guide service primarily on state lands, our clients already have to agree to hunt with us in the most poorly managed land base that exists in Alaska. And with this 100% increase, they'll have to pay for the vast majority of Alaska's wildlife conservation measures in exchange for being treated to the most disrespectful industry stewardship imaginable. There's currently no limit of the amount of impact on the professional guide industry can impact wildlife conservation with, no protection for these non-resident hunters to have a quality hunt, or to protect Alaska's delicate social atmospheres related to subsistence and general resident hunters. Guiding on state lands has a much greater amount of law enforcement issues, which our visiting sportsmen and women are exposed to, and the list goes on. We are long overdue, Mr. Chairman, for a license fee increase for residents and non-residents. There are many thousands of Alaskans who are willing to pay for the privilege of hunting in this state and would be pleased to contribute to the greatest model of wildlife conservation the world has ever known, the North American model. To take this desire away from them and Alaska for political reasons is not fair or respectful to the whole. Several years ago, as you know, I drafted a very comparable bill to HB 137. It had broad spectrum support from every resident hunter that it was exposed to. Yet when I shopped it for a sponsor within the state capitol, there was opposition to including resident hunters in any respect within the increased fees. My encouragement is for you to help Alaska and ADF&G with this bill. include a respect and fairness within it by including resident license fees of, instead of providing us with a continued free ride at someone else's expense, and establish no more than a 50% increase in non-resident big game tags and move forward for Alaska. As an additional request, I'd like to encourage language within the bill that includes the concept of a sportsman's license that would include big game tags, fish and waterfall stamps, and would develop a more thorough electronic licensing and recording base for ADF&G. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for all the work you do for Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Fithian. Are there any questions from the committee?
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fithian, you used a term. You're supportive of the North American model. I haven't heard anybody who isn't, virtually. But you talked about, I think you used the term disrespect and poor management. And can you sort of unambiguously tell me what you're referring to?
Yes, sir. I'd be very pleased to. Currently, on state of Alaska lands, if I guide on state of Alaska lands, all I have to do is walk into the DNR office in Anchorage and pay my $500 and walk out. It takes about 3 minutes, and I'm licensed to guide an unlimited amount of hunters on any part of state lands in Alaska where I am authorized to guide within my guide license and guide use area registrations. So there's nothing stopping however many hundreds or however many thousands of hunters to be booked by professional guides to hunt on state lands, where historically we had restrictions on geographical regions guide, and the number of guides could conduct their activities on. We do not currently have that. So their impacts on our state lands, on the resources, on the delicate atmosphere, social atmosphere, subsistence hunters, general resident hunters, is just a free-for-all on state lands. The federal agencies gave the state a number of years to fix that situation, which they didn't do. And now the feds have taken control of their lands with respectful concession programs that provide for protection for the visiting hunters and the stewardship of our resources. So on state lands, a fee increase is an extra slap in the face to those hunters who choose to hunt in Alaska on state lands. I apologize for the long-winded answer, but that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you, Mr. Fithian. Any further questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Rep. Tarr, quickly.
Thank you. Sir, I'm just wanting to understand a little bit better if you participate in some of the hunting organizations, because my understanding with the 100% increase on the non-resident fees is this was a proposal worked on by many of the groups, and it just did you take part in that, or are you a member of those groups?
Unfortunately, I am a longtime member and leader of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. But unfortunately, we didn't have an opportunity to weigh in on this issue within our membership due to conflicting programs that were going on, the Board of Game and challenging timelines for the organization to get proper input from its members. So unfortunately, ma'am, no, we did not, and I did not. And had I had the opportunity, I would have tried to encourage a lesser amount of fee increase than the 100% for non-resident big game tags. The rest of them look pretty reasonable for Alaska. That's the one that would be very hard for some of us to adapt and adopt to.
Thank you, Mr. Fithian. Any further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. Mitch Falk. Mitch, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Could you please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony, about 2 minutes?
Roger that. My name is Mitch Falk. I'm a resident of Juneau. I'd like to testify in support of the bill to raise the license fees for residents and non-residents alike. I think it's time that we start taking advantage, one, of these Pittman-Robertson funds that are available. We're leaving those on the table by not raising these fees. I also think that it's probably time to start charging for the $10 or whatever to go tag for a moose tag or a caribou tag. I don't think that's too much to ask. For the price of a 13-inch pepperoni pizza, I think you can go get a moose. Also, I would like to say it's probably time to curtail the issuing of lifetime residents, lifetime hunting licenses. I know there are tens of thousands of those. I think close to 60 or 70,000 of those that have been issued. And I think that just like the longevity bonus, it is probably time to sunset those. That's all I have real quick.
Thank you, Mitch. Any questions for Mr. Falk? Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it.
Okay. You done?
Yep, thank you. And now we will go to the Homer Legislative Information Office, Roberta Highland.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. Please identify yourself for the record and provide us your testimony.
Yes, my name is Roberta Highland, and I live in Homer, Alaska. And I am supporting an amendment, but I'm not seeing the exact writing of what I'm supporting. So this is the amendment that I prefer to HB 137, but I also want to say I do support HB 137, and to me the license fees seem really low for what you get for that license fee. And so anyhow, I'm definitely in support of increasing that. The one thing I'm wanting to see is a wildlife conservation emblem program. So there is one, Section 1 AS 16.05.130 is amended by adding, and I'm probably ahead of the game here, but it's money accruing to the state from Alaska's Fish and Wildlife Conservation Emblem Program shall be deposited into the Fish and Game Fund and shall be used by the Department for Conservation Programs, including viewing, education, and diversity. And Section 2 is AS 16.05 is amended by adding a new section to read Section 16.05XXX contributions to the Alaska's Fish and Wildlife Conservation Emblem Program. And that's also the Alaska Department of Fish and Game shall develop a Fish and Wildlife Conservation Emblem. Persons may contribute any amount to the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Emblem Program and may elect to receive a certificate, decal, or other recognition offered by the Department for a contribution of $20 or more. Contributions and sale proceeds of items bearing the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Emblem will benefit the programs per AS 16.05.130G. So it's a little bit different than apparently the one that's been put in for a Fish and Game Conservation Decal. They sound somewhat similar, but we were looking at for a Wildlife Conservation Emblem Program. And this is to allow the viewing people to have to be counted in the numbers. And just as an example, the economic activity of spending, viewing is $2,750,000,000 is what it brings in. Hunting is $1,326,000,000. Jobs are 18,820 jobs for viewing versus 8,400 jobs for hunting. So we've got a really large number of viewers, and it just seems like it would be the most sensible idea for us to attempt to get some funding. And a lot of conservation people would like to pay into something like this, that they can be supporting conservation along with the hunting and fishing. So at this time, those numbers are not edited out, that they're all included in one, the hunting and fishing. So I don't know if I'm making sense, but that's the thought.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Do you have any questions for Ms. Highland? Oh, thank you. Ms. Highland, if you have that written out and you have it available by email, I would certainly welcome having you send that to me via email, and I will distribute that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Yes.
And now if we can go to the Fairbanks LIO, and we have Mike Tinker. Mr. Tinker, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Thank you. Could you give us your name and provide us your testimony, please?
My name is Mike Tinker. I live in Esther, Alaska, where I have resided for 50 years. I would like to talk to you and the members of the House Resources, and thanks for the opportunity. I support the concept of raising the license and tag fees. However, I'd like you to focus for a moment on Alaska Statute 1605.130, parens D, and that's the section that requires the expenditure of license and tag fees for department programs intended to directly benefit licensed purchasers of general hunting, trapping, and fishing licenses. I realize that part of your intent for the legislation is to replace some of the general funds now used by sport fish and wildlife conservation. How is it possible to charge more fees and not to find a benefit for those paying them? General funds are not required to be used for programs directly benefiting the licensed purchasers. Please look at the increases from hunters, trappers, and the fishermen's perspective, and they ask, what am I getting for the additional cost? I ask you that you request the department answer that question in some detail. In that answer will be found either support for the increases or a groundswell of opposition against 137. I know a dozen advisory committees and organizations and individuals who are poised, waiting to hear how they will benefit before they get involved in the issue. The department can answer that question and should be asked to do so. I worked up a rough estimate of the possible additional revenue for Representative Tallarico, comparing the existing license sales with the bill and the NGO high estimates for the people who testified at the last hearing. I had no idea when I started that the department tracks 49 different types of licenses. That estimate clearly shows that it's not possible to replace all the general funds, which leaves another question. Are we discussing a formula, for the lack of a better word, on how the new revenue, how much to leave in the fund, and how much general funds can be replaced? I understand that your intent is not to further cut the department's programs. The hunters, trappers, and fishers are trying to get some cost-benefit feeling for the increases they will pay. Thus far, there's no information to that purpose. Even the self-proclaimed hunting leadership that previously testified were very careful not to say anything about the use of new money. I suspect, hoping that your intent was to put it all in the Fish and Game Fund. By the way, that leadership represents less than 10% of the license holders at best, and the other 90% have not yet been heard from. I'm urging some caution as you listen to those who are testifying on the bill. There are some what-ifs that need your consideration. For example, we sell very few, less than 1,100 actual trapping licenses. Another 9,300 are part of multiple license packages. The low-income portion for trapping doesn't change under the present bill. If the trapping license portion increases, residents can save that additional money by simply not buying the multiple licenses. Since the money from trapping licenses goes on to support fur bearer programs, they could easily lose money under the proposed increase. Also, all trapping is subsistence, as defined by the Board of Game, and you need to take into consideration those subsistence requirements on licensing. Such issues as short-term non-resident fishing licenses and tags are also at risk from a supporting public that may shift where they spend their money because of new total cost. Recall, most of our waters have very low harvest limits for king salmon. For example, how much is one king salmon worth, as a seasoned bag limit is one. In conclusion, I'd like to thank Representative Tallarico on the record for taking up the issues in House Bill 137. I wish you would look at the language in the section of the statute also, as well as the numbers, as there are some simple changes that would clarify what our hunters and fishers are doing. The increases further divide Alaskans who are hunting and fishing for subsistence and those trying to put fish and game in their freezers under other licenses. I hope we continue to work on this bill and find some answers to my questions, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Tinker. Any questions for Mr. Tinker? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Tinker, my understanding, taking this from the department's perspective, is that if there are not staff and, you know, funds available to hire staff to be able to do the surveys so that we can have an inventory, then you don't have the information necessary for the Board of Game to make allocation decisions, which means that potentially you'd have to have, you know, a particular game unit closed down, or the hunting opportunity would be eliminated altogether. Do you see that as a benefit? From my perspective, that it would be the main benefit of this bill, is just making sure that you have the resources necessary to actually get the numbers you need to then be able to make allocation decisions.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, the department will always make a population estimate for the given, especially the higher use animals like moose and caribou, and they will share that with local advisory committees, and elected advisory committee officials from all over the state will weigh in on what they think those season bag limits ought to be. The question is, if there's enough money, we will get high probability estimates, and the accuracy will be good. If there's less money, those may be, and the department will certainly tell us so, low probability estimates, i.e. with large discrepancies possible. So yes, that is one of the opportunities to spend some extra money on, and that's why I support not trying to replace all their GF, but mainly having the idea of replacing some small portion of it and allowing them to continue to grow. One of the things Wildlife Conservation has not done a good job of in the past is sharing the information on exactly what programs they're spending the money on. And I don't mean just survey and inventory. I'm talking about survey and inventory, for example, in 14C around Anchorage or down around Kenai. Those kind of that kind of information is available to them, but they do not share it readily, and you have to kind of coax them to get it out of them. We have some, for example, in the IM programs where you can get actual details if you go talk to the region, but if you don't, the director's office and up in the head shed will just tell you, well, we spent so much statewide. So there is some discrepancy in the accuracy of the information we get, but your question is a good one, and it goes right to the point of getting some detail on what we're going to spend it for.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Tinker, for your testimony. Now, if we is Al Barrett online, Mr. Barrett?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Thank you. Could you identify yourself and please provide your testimony?
My name is Al Barrett. For the record, I reside in Fairbanks. I'm just representing myself. I have support for license fee increases, and there seems to be a lot of support from people that are involved in this. One thing I'd like to bring up is, you know, conservatively, I figure there's 20,000 Alaskans not paying for the resource, not paying for this management that we're discussing and need the money for. Currently, I figure there's a potential of 17,000 subsistence fishermen in this state, and that's through Fish and Game's numbers, that don't require a license at all. They're the second biggest taker and users of our fish resources, yet not helping to pay for that management. We basically have 2,000 National Guard and Reserve persons that get a free hunting license, and I figure there's about 2,000 hunters in this state that just don't buy a hunting license at all. And you can match that information on the Western Arctic Caribou Herd. I have a problem with the 29,000 in the low income. I'd like to know what that number represents. Is that taxable income? Is that before taxes? It was a number that was thrown out there, and I haven't gotten what that number represents. Is that before or after taxes? And in the statute, it says gross income tax. What kind of gross? Is that net gross, adjusted gross? You know, things like that need to be clear so when people are, you know, applying for these things, they understand what that $29,000. And does that increase the potential for people getting a $5 license or decrease it? Questions that should be asked. You know, the King Salmon Stamp. Just ask anybody in the interior how that King Salmon Stamp is working out for us since you guys enacted that thing. Since the enactment of it, King Salmon opportunity has decreased to none in the last 5 years in the interior. We don't even get an opportunity to catch one fish anymore. I think there's quite a discrepancy in the APHA community. You got one lobbyist down there last week saying they were excited, their clients were excited about paying more, yet a well-known member was on there today saying that, you know, that's not what the way he sees it. I think from last week's hearing, I heard that these numbers were randomly chosen, and how much will the public bear before they just revolt and not pay or just go and do what some of the other Alaskans do, is not buy a license at all. I think we should consider, and there should be justification and reasons why and how much we're raising licenses, and that should be, you know, very clear in the record for future uses. Mm-hmm. I think there'll be a problem with raising the age to 18 with our drawing hunts. We currently have a different age than the 18 that's being proposed for no license, and you have to have a license to apply for a drawing hunt, or you hunt underneath your parent or guardian or sponsor's for drawing tags, so you're going to have a little bit of problem there. I see my time is up, so I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. Any questions for Mr. Barrett? Thank you very much. Oh, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you please just send us some of these different suggestions? Sounds like you ran out of time. I'd just be curious if you have other thoughts.
I'll try to do that. Thank you, Representative Tarr, through the chair.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Barrett. Now we'll go to the Mat-Su LIO and Nick Steen. Mr. Steen, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you very much. My name is Nick Steen. I represent myself. I have lived here in the Valley for the past 35 years. I'm a 50-year resident of the state of Alaska. The present downturn, first of all, let me say that I oppose HB 137. The present downturn in the price of oil has positioned the economy of the state of Alaska somewhat similar to what it was in the 1980s when we saw massive foreclosures of homes, high unemployment rates, and bank closures. To add a tax, which is this basically is what this is, to add a tax such as this is of 15 to 20% is a very onerous situation, particularly in this economy. For a family of four, it would now, under your new bill or this proposed bill, cost an astounding amount of $280 just for people to go hunting with approximately a 10, for moose, for approximately a 10% opportunity of harvesting an animal. I realize we've got to somehow maintain the PR and DJ funds, but this is not the way to do it. To increase taxes on the residents at this particular time is not my idea of what should be done. I urge you to reconsider this this portion of it, and well, you can do what you want with the non-residents. I'm not worried about them. I'm more concerned about the resident hunters and the upcoming hunters that we have here. Also, I was just handed a an amendment which talked about the senior citizen free license, if you wish, for a renewal every 3 years, which seems ridiculous to me. If you're going to give it to us, and I happen to be a senior citizen, why would you charge the state to renew this on a three-year annual basis? Give it to us once, and it'll only cost you one time. That's all I have. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Steen. Any questions for Mr. Steen? Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. Now we'll go off-net to Vic Bishop. Mr. Bishop?
Vic Bishop?
Yeah, please give us your name for the record and your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. My name is Vic Bishop. I live in Goldstein Valley in the Fairbanks, North Scarborough. I appreciate being able to call in and testify on HB 137 version 1. I support this bill, HB 137M, and its revisions raising prices in the fishing, hunting, and trapping license fee structures. Every additional dollar raised can likely be matched by $3 from federal aid to fish and wildlife restoration funds that is distributed to the states annually. Even with the modest increases proposed in this bill, both residents and non-residents get a good deal because we have such great opportunities for fishing, hunting, and trapping. For example, my family and I have enjoyed and benefited from these opportunities since 1961. Fish and game have comprised almost all of our meat for over five decades. Hunting, fishing, trapping, and gathering gives us great food and great satisfaction. The state of Alaska's fish and game management programs are sound, but the cost to sustain them keeps increasing along with almost everything else. Fishers, hunters, and trappers have been willing to pay for fish and wildlife management going back decades to the federal duck stamp, the Pittman-Robertson Act, and the Dingell-Johnson Act, not to mention territorial and state license fees. The results have been outstanding fish and wildlife management programs, which benefit not only fish and wildlife, but fishers, hunters, trappers, and society at large. Increased license and tag fees are appropriate, especially now when state general funds are in short supply. As this bill moves forward, I suggest the legislature consider whether the fee structures in HB 137N will adequately offset the potential loss of general fund dollars to the sportfish and wildlife divisions. Also, please consider the state's ability to match available Pittman, Robertson, and Dingell Johnson federal funds. As I mentioned, those funds are derived from hunters and fishers nationally and pay $3 for each $1 of state license and tag fee dollars. Thank you very much for work on this bill. It's a lot of information to keep track of, and I really appreciate your efforts and the direction that this effort is going. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Bishop. Any questions for Mr. Bishop? I'm seeing none. Thank you very much for your testimony, and I would like to go to Walter Sherman. Mr. Sherman, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm in here.
Thank you. Could you give us your name for the record and your testimony, please?
Yes, sir. My name is Walter Sherman. Thank you, House Resources Committee. Thank you, sir, and all the members there. What I'd like to do is on HB 137, on fees to hunt and trap and sport fish, I have a question. Okay, I turned 60 years old this summer, and I grew up in the territory of Alaska, born in 1955 before we even became a state. I'm thinking, like, aren't I supposed to get this? Now they want to go to 62. I'm going, like, well, wait a minute. I don't mind if we raise rates or whatever. I'll pay extra for the tags or whatever. But if something happens to me, I might not even make it to 62. And then it occurred to me, it's not about me. It's about who else is here in Alaska. Hey, they deserve this. They're right here. They're just getting to it. We made 60. Oh, boy, let's get our license. And then they want to make it 62. Well, who's going to be left? That's basically all I had to say. I don't mind raising rates. I understand that we're $3.5 billion in debt. But could we do a little bit of a exception on that one part for people that are old and have been here for a while? That maybe they might deserve a little break. And by the way, I'm a Doyon shareholder. I contacted Doyon here 2 hours ago and talked to the legal department. Because I was going to tell them, and I'm going to tell you guys, and I'm going to tell the people in Alaska, yes, we respect our elders. I do not represent Doyon. We had to make that sure that is legal. I do not represent Doyon. But there are elders, and we're trying to do something here. Can't we get a little exception here, please? And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. Are there any questions for Mr. Sherman? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I just would mention, Mr. Sherman, that the way the bill is written now, its effective date is January 1st, 2016, so you would have your birthday this summer, you would get your lifetime license, and then be grandfathered in.
Great.
Any other questions for Mr. Sherman? Thank you very much, Mr. Sherman. We appreciate your testimony. And if we can go...
I appreciate what you do, but excuse me for interrupting, but I appreciate what you do. I watch you. I've been watching you guys ever since day one here in the session. And, yeah, you guys have a lot to do. I mean, oh, my gosh. Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And if we could go to Mike McCrary. Mr. McCrary?
Yes.
Yeah, Mr.
My name is Mike. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Could you give us your name and your testimony, please?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike McCrary. Thank you and the committee for the opportunity to testify. I support raising fees, and I particularly support incorporating the non-consumptive users into this fee structure. I think there's a lot of value in that. I still feel like the non-resident raises to 100% from what they are now still undervalues the tags and licenses for non-residents. I'm opposed to incorporating any kind of IM tax fee structure into this legislation. The reasons for that are the Board of Game continues to allow non-residents, even when they know that prey species populations are declining, they continue to allow non-residents to participate in the hunts. And even after hunts go into IM, non-residents are allowed, again by the Board of Game, to continue hunting prey species in IM areas. Another reason that's related to the irrational behavior of the Board of Game, allowing non-residents to participate when the resources are declining, and Alaskans are having a harder opportunity to connect with the resource, is the must-be-guided law. That law encourages non-residents to come to Alaska and actually hunt a moose or a caribou, and it discourages non-residents from coming to Alaska to hunt bears due to the extra burden of having to hire a guide. And even if that law did not change, didn't apply statewide, it certainly should be applied. It should be changed so that non-residents are authorized in IM areas to come and hunt bears without a guide. I think that would add a lot of value, and it would shorten the time that areas are in IM. I'm not advocating a war on bears by non-residents, but I think the Board of Game is mismanaging our resource, and that's a big reason why we're going into IM, because of the cost and value of tax and because of this must-be-guided law. So that's about all I have to say today. I did submit my testimony in writing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McCrary. Any questions for Mr. McCrary?
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
I just want to clarify, Mr. McCrary, you wrote an email as well, did you not, to the legislators?
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay, I've got that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. McCrary. Yeah, now if we thank you. If we could go to Seward and Diane, I'm going to say Dubuque. I probably have that wrong. Diane, are you there?
No, you do, sir. My name is Diane Dubuque. I'm a resident of Seward. I am vice chair of the Fish and Game Advisory Committee here. I represent Seward at the Board of Fish level. I'm speaking this evening for myself and not for the AC. I'm going to speak about something different that nobody has this evening, and I'd like to start with Section 1, Line 6 of Page 1. The Board of Fisheries may adopt regulations it considers advisable in accordance with AS 44.62. Starting on Line 12, it would be Item 2, establishing open and closed seasons for the areas of taking of fish is consistent with resource and development goals.
Diane, you are going to connect this to HB 137, is that correct?
That's what I'm reading off of.
Thank you.
I'm reading off of line 12, page 1. Establishing the open... So, basically, I believe that the open and closed seasons is very broad as written. I believe that this is being done by emergency order now through the department. Moving ahead to page 2, line 5, item 3. Setting quotas, bag limits, harvest levels, sex and size limitation on taking of fish. I see a problem with this with in-season management. Basically, looking at this part of this bill from Section 1A on page 1 through page 3, line 19, item 17, I think that this is putting a lot of onus on the Board of Fish, and I don't want to see the Department of Fish and Game shut out the process. I believe that there are biological imperatives in fish management, and politics should be left aside. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Dubuque? No, seeing none. Thank you for your testimony.
I'm
going to go
loud.
And I don't believe we had any other LI or off-net testimony. Okay, thank you very much. We're going to go to testimony right here for folks that are present, and I do have Matt Robus and Doug Larson. Please come forward. Give us your name for the record and your testimony, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Matt Robus. I reside here in Juneau. This is personal testimony, but I need to tell you that I'm a board member of the Territorial Sportsmen Incorporated, which is a local advocacy group for outdoors issues, and we are part of the group of groups that have come up with the so-called compromise that I'm sure you've seen. I also had the privilege of being director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation from 2003 through 2007 when I retired from the department. With me here, and who's going to give his personal testimony after me, is Doug Larson, who's also an ex-director from the department. Having held that position, it gives us a better than average feel for the puzzle for funding the Wildlife Division and, to a certain extent, the Sport Fish Division. When I was director, when I came into the office in the early 2000s, one of the big problems we had at that point was the virtual lack of general funding, and it meant that we just didn't have very much flexibility. The fish and game fund license fee type money was largely used to match, to pull in the $3 for every state dollar of Pittman-Robertson federal aid monies. We had a very hard time finding funding to do other special projects that were not covered or coverable with federal funds. And just to give some examples, this state is just going to see more and more endangered species petitions over time. That's the type of thing where the department needs to gather a lot of information, do a lot of good science to sustain the state's position and make sure good decisions are made, and that really can't be done with the federal aid monies. Certain education activities, and of course the big one that's been discussed here already, is intensive management in order to try to restore some of our ungulate prey populations. The legislature responded to that issue after a couple of years, at first with some general fund CIPs, and then eventually general funds in the regular division budget. Ironically, the problem today is that in both those divisions, the general fund portion of the budget has climbed to 13% in each case. So with general fund being so obviously vulnerable right now, it means that a substantial wedge out of the pie that makes up those divisions' budget could go away in large proportion pretty quickly here. That reduction will do several things in the Wildlife Division, with which I'm most familiar. It's going to reduce the ability to do field research and inventories that will allow the department to advise the Board of Game on determining where IM programs are needed, where they're feasible, if they're defensible. This is work in addition to the standard survey and inventory work that we do fund. Again, sorry, the department funds with federal aid monies and Fish and Game Fund monies. There's an incredible amount of science that's necessary to do those intensive management programs properly. And the courts so far have upheld the division in its efforts when it's been challenged because of that science. If the science isn't there, I don't think it is near as defensible. One of the questions that's come up at the previous hearing, and it came up in testimony by others tonight, is, you know, what's the benefit of gathering more Fish and Game Fund dollars? Is this to expand intensive management programs? And the answer is no. I think the best that the department can do is try to avoid losing progress that's been made through intensive management programs to provide more wildlife to Alaskans who need moose and caribou and so forth. Another effect that reduction of general funds is going to have is both divisions' ability to reach out and get those three federal dollars for every state dollar that's put up for Pittman-Robertson on the wildlife side, Dingle Johnson on the sport fish side. A lot of people are very cautious about going out and grabbing federal money, but I can tell you that federal money, combined with our licensed dollars, is an incredibly important foundation for all of the survey and inventory research work that's done. And without it, it's very flexible money. There's only a few things you can't use it for. Without that money, the divisions would be hamstrung. On the wildlife side, the Pittman-Robertson grant monies that are available is climbing radically. And it's to the point where without adequate boost to the wildlife funding, the wildlife division may be leaving Pittman-Robertson dollars on the table. And those dollars, after a couple of years, after the accounting stuff that you can do to preserve them as long as possible, could revert to the federal government. And that seems silly when the state is hurting for funds. So that's one reason that I would be in support of raising fees for the Fish and Game Fund. On the sport fish side, it's a little different. The Dingell-Johnson monies are either stagnant or declining slightly, so there's more need to backfill that with Fish and Game Fund dollars if they can be acquired. I already mentioned response to endangered species initiative issues. I think Doug might talk a little bit more about a specific case. There's wildlife education opportunities that need to be funded that we can't always use federal funds for. So all in all, with the general funds diminishing, there's a need to offset that to as great a degree as possible with asking users to pay more. One thing that I don't know if it's been said officially is that our research has shown that a $25 hunting license in 1993, the last time there was an increase, would cost $41 today just because of inflation. And so this bill, while I appreciate very much, Representative Tallarico, that you've introduced it and gotten a vehicle for this to be discussed, the prices that are shown in the bill are actually a little bit somewhat under the cost of inflation. So it's obviously something that's going to have to be sorted out in the halls of the legislature, but there is a great need for funding those divisions, and with general funds having been given over the last couple of decades and about to be taken away, inflation alone has put the divisions in quite a sensitive spot. So thank you. That's my testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Robles. Any questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, with your experience and your previous position, and maybe both of you can comment on this, was an effort like this initiated before? And there's mostly support, that's what we're hearing, but for the one individual that said, you know, we need to know what the department's doing more, from your sort of historical understanding and having been involved, how could we be better communicating that to the public to make them understand how it works?
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, when I was director, and before that when I was deputy director, and before that when I was an area biologist, you know, I always sincerely thought that I was getting information out, and I'm sure that at the other end of that gap, there's always the feeling, there's some frustration that not everything is coming out. Mm-hmm. I guess another thing I'll say is that biologists and Board of Game members and directors have to make decisions based on incomplete information in this field almost all the time. And so, you know, I truly didn't think that when I was there we were trying to withhold information, but we may not have been as forthcoming as people would have liked either. I know I had lots of discussions in the hallways at Board of Game meetings with people around the state trying to communicate with them, but it's you know, it's always a continuing challenge, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Mr. Robles? Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. And Mr. Larson, could you identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Doug Larson. As Mr. Robles said, I'm giving personal testimony today, but like Mr. Robles, I'm a board member of the Territorial Sportsmen Association. And, of course, we agree with the comments and the testimony that was presented last week by the coalition that included Mr. Somerville, Mr. Grasser, Mr. Stacy, and Mr. Arno. But as Mr. Robles said also, you know, we think that the fees that are incorporated in the bill as it exists today are lower than what we'd like to see just because of the inflation, if nothing else. So I wanted to focus on three specific areas. One was a little bit more of an expansion on the IM questions. Second was on the ESA and how funds are necessary and useful for that purpose. And then third, I'd like to just mention briefly the wildlife transition team input that came through the governor's transition team process here a few months ago. So relative to IM, I think there's been some questions, certainly, and maybe even some misunderstandings about how funding can be used and is used by the department for intensive management. The reality is that there are many examples of where intensive management funds are used not only to go out and do predator control, which is a part of IM, but it's not the whole of IM. You can also do habitat work. You can also do work to assess what habitat condition is to see whether predator control or removal of some predator species is appropriate or warranted. I can give you examples of many times where IM was proposed for areas, and yet in the end they weren't implemented because the department was able to take funding that was available, get the information that was necessary, and in cases showed that going in and removing more predators was not the answer in those particular situations. Really good example of that was here right in Southeast, where in the last couple of years there's been talk about getting the deer population in southern Southeast around Ketchikan increased because it doesn't meet the intensive management population or harvest objectives. Staff went down there, did habitat assessment and population assessment, and concluded that with the habitat that's available there, doing an IM program to remove wolves in that situation did not make sense biologically. So by having something like an IM surcharge, it isn't saying to the department, you can go out and implement IM with helter-skelter or even expand beyond what it's doing now. Rather, that would allow for the information to be gathered that would help to determine whether or not further actions would be warranted or necessary. In the past, the legislature has been very generous in providing CIP funds, as Mr. Roba said. But in this day, with the revenues situation being what it is, the department anticipates that's not going to continue, at least not to the extent that it has. And this would be a way to supplant those funds that wouldn't be available otherwise. And, of course, the downside to not having funds to do those things is that you find yourself in a situation where you have to be more conservative, or you can't even go in and do what the law, the 1994 Intensive Management Law, requires, which is to get that information and see what actions can be done to change that. So I think it's really important to just make that clear. Secondly, relative to endangered species, I'm sure many of you could think of examples of where endangered species petitions have impacted Alaskans. One of the key ones that I'm most familiar with right now is the Southeast Alaska's Alexander Archipelago Wolf petition to be listed as endangered. And I know, having just recently served as the regional supervisor for Southeast Alaska before I retired, that the information necessary to withstand lawsuits and to be able to defend the outcome of that situation really has necessitated an incredible amount of funds to put people and resources on the ground to get the information that's going to be used by the Fish and Wildlife Service in making that determination. And so, and of course, things like listings have huge implications not only for hunting and trapping, which of course we're talking about in the context of this bill, but for mineral and timber development and other sorts of development. It has huge implications for that as well. So from a broad economic standpoint, the funding that's used by the department to get that information really has broad implications beyond just the hunting and fishing community. And Mr. Chairman, the final thing I wanted to mention was I had the privilege of serving on the transition team, the wildlife team for the transition program. And it was interesting because in that group that I participated with, there were people there that I'd interacted with when I was director, but we didn't see eye to eye on things and we didn't agree with necessarily the way we should proceed. And yet, it was interesting to me that all of us came together in the spirit of trying to find common ground, and we did. We found a lot of common ground. And among the things that we found for common ground was this need to increase and diversify revenue. And so, obviously, the license fee increase was one of the things the transition team supported strongly, and the diversity. And that's where this idea of a conservation pass or a stamp or something of that nature came into being, because as somebody mentioned earlier tonight in testimony, there are a lot of people who would love to contribute to wildlife conservation in the state of Alaska, and they really don't feel that they have a venue because they're not necessarily hunters, they're not necessarily anti-hunters or anti-fishing, but they just don't participate themselves, and yet they want to contribute. And so the transition team sees that as a potential opportunity to capture more funding that could then be used for conservation. And that's very much in keeping with what was proposed years ago through the Conservation and Reinvestment Act federally, that didn't go anywhere. It later transitioned to the State Wildlife Grants Program. So those funds would help with programs like education and others that right now the department's strapped for in terms of having the sufficient funds to cover those topics. Mr. Chairman, those are the things I wanted to hit on, and again, I really appreciate you bringing this forward for consideration and for the opportunity tonight to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Any questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's not so much a question, but, you know, we've thrown around terms, DJ and PR, and you've got a certain group of people that say we take money from the federal government, we're just putting more burden on our children, and it's a 3-to-1 match. Can you, just for the record, tell people where that money comes from, and so we can kind of get a grasp that, well, I know, and I think they're going to tell the answer, but just for the record, let everyone know where that 3-to-1 match comes from.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'd be happy to. So in 1939, the sports men and women of America said, we need a way to fund wildlife conservation and management in this country. And so they passed a bill that is now known as Pittman-Robertson. It was the two individuals who were responsible for that. And on the fisheries side, a similar act called the Dingell-Johnson, Mr. Dingell and Mr. Johnson, were responsible for introducing legislation. And what that has done over the years is it has taken and put an excise tax on the sale of firearms and ammunition, or in the case of Dingell-Johnson, a tax on motorboat gas and other things that I'm less familiar with, but again, a tax on those things. And those dollars went into a federal pot, which were then divvied out to all the states on a formula. And the maximum that any state could get was 5%, and still is 5%. And it's based on numbers of people and land mass. Well, Alaska has not that many people, but we have a lot of land. So we get the 5%. We're one of the states that gets 5% of that pot. Well, with the recent increase in the sale of firearms and ammunition, for whatever reason you want to put on it, there's a lot of speculation out there as to why, there's a lot more money, as Mr. Robes said, in that Pittman-Robertson account because of that. Well, on the other side of the coin, so that's the $3 that comes into the state. But to get those $3, you've got to have a dollar on the state side. And that's where the Fish and Game Fund is so important. And that's where license fees and tag fees and those kinds of things go into a pot. And the dollar that comes out of that state pot is used to match those $3 from the federal pot. So again, not having sufficient dollars in that Fish and Game Fund is what Mr. Robes was referring to earlier, where then we couldn't match necessarily all the federal dollars, which means that there'd be federal dollars that would perhaps go away and not be used by the state.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that explanation. I just want to be real clear that this is a tax on sportsmen to preserve their lifestyle and the habitat that we all love so much, and hunters as well. So this is kind of a self-imposed tax that we have access to money for. So we're not taking money out of the treasury. We're taking money out of a voluntary, pretty much, system that allows us to tap that money. So you want to kind of know where the money came from. We're not stealing from our grandchildren. So this is, we're trying to help our grandchildren still be able to hunt and fish. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Larson, very much. And Mr. Robes, we appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else present that would like to testify? Do we have anyone else online? No? No one else online and no one else present to testify? Okay, well, I'm going to close public testimony. And at this time, I think we will bring up our CS for House Bill 137. It's version N that we have in front of us for discussion. And I believe we have a few amendments. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move
N-1 as amendment number one.
No object. There is an objection. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And N-1 is looking at the replacing the permanent sport fishing, hunting, and trapping identification card for certain state residents with an identification card valid for 3 years. And the reason we have that is because, first of all, looking at the title and addressing that, not going by pages. What we have is a permanent identification card, and the last time, it's been several years ago when I looked, there were 83,000 of those, and there was no Fish and Game couldn't tell us how many were current residents or how many were PFD recipients or anything else. It's a little card that I have in my wallet that's getting old and worn, but we have a lot of people that leave the state and then return to our state. But they still have this card that says you can hunt and fish and trap for free. And there's no requirement even that they carry that card. And so what we need to do is have a renewal period in which people recertify that they are still residents of the state. Because since residency of the state is not identified in this section, does that mean you can have a 30-day voter residency, just maintain your voter residency here? You know, buy a house, live outside all the time, just come up in the summer. There's no qualification on that at all. So what this does is make sure that we have a free renewal for people as they get older, but that they are residents of the state and we can find that out, and that they would be required to carry it with them when they're hunting or fishing, which is not an unreasonable thing. Everybody has to carry their hunting and fishing license. The other change that we've made on page one of the bill is to take that from 62, which is in the current bill, to 65. And the reason that change is there is, you know, we were told that, well, people could alternatively select Social Security at 62. 65 is the normal retirement age, 65 is the normal Social Security age, but it's also within the Fish and Game regulations, as you see on page 2 of the amendment, the age at which proxy hunting, proxy fishing are allowed. All of our other statutes relate to 65. And so making that consistent throughout, I think, is a benefit. And this would, on the back page, you can see that the Act will continue the current PIDs, permanent identification cards, would be valid through January 1st, 2019, at which time then you would have to get the three-year renewable ones. And that would, that's basically what the amendment does. It tries to update us to where we are at 65, make it so that it is really residents, and we know that, and we know how many there are, because right now there's just an, once they're issued, they're on the books, and we have no idea how many hunters and fishers, trappers that are over, that have these cards are really still alive even. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Committee, any questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if there's anyone from the department line that can kind of give us a cost of what this would be to start having the reissue every 3 years as opposed to permanent. Is there any way we could?
I think we might have someone from the department with us. I'm not sure they're prepared for that, but it looks like Mr. Mulligan maybe, and maybe a couple of folks to, if you would both please identify yourselves for the record. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Fish and Game.
For the record, my name is Sunny Haidt. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for the department.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, after we've talked about this cursorily, we're not, there's, as Rep. Seaton said, there's about 83,000 permanent IDs out there with 6,000 to 8,000 new ones every year. Not knowing how many of those would still want theirs and be reapplying, it'd be real hard for us to give you a ballpark right now, but we can do our best to come back with it, because we're going to have to underneath a new fiscal note. But right now, we're just not sure how many new folks would want to apply We applied for their PID in 2019, so it would be hard for us to give you a ballpark.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Would it be fair to say that, and this would qualify for Pittman, Roberts, and Johnson, Nicholson, yeah. So for every dollar, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Just the fishing.
If they these are for all free, so it would be if they didn't qualify, and then if they then came back right. And bought a fishing license.
Well, but the expense would be money out of the 3-to-1 match that we could get. Yes, I mean.
The expenses that it would take our licensing section?
So if it costs us $1,000, we're losing $3,000. If we lose a dollar, we lose $3. I mean, there's a number out there. So this would cost us the money out of that fund, correct? Yes or no? I mean, I don't know the answer to that.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, out of the Fish and Game Fund, but could you just repeat the question so I'm really clear on what you're asking?
If the fiscal note on this is $1,000,
mm-hmm.
then we would potentially lose $3,000 from Johnson, Dingler, Pittman, Roberts funds because we wouldn't have that potential match, depending on how you chose to use it.
For the record, I'm not sure that that's accurate.
I don't know either. I'm just wondering what, if it is or not.
Right. We can run the analysis. Having just seen this amendment, we haven't had a chance to go through all the numbers, but we can certainly do that in pretty short order.
Okay. Representative Josephson, do you have a question?
Thank you. Yes, through the chair. Mr. Mulligan, this amendment, it looks like it has some pluses and minuses relative to our general fund, right? I mean, there's going to be some administrative costs, but some people are going to come up and want a license that would otherwise have been free to them. So are they offsetting, or is it just too soon to tell?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I was just about to mention that. I mean, you could have some expenses associated with it, but then again, you have folks that normally want to come up anyway and still would pay a non-resident fee, and non-resident fees are high enough that it wouldn't take much of these 83,000 folks, or probably less, because you'd have to claim at the list, and to come up and actually match that out, the expense, and get and have a wash. But we'd have to run some more numbers and talk to our licensing folks.
Mm-hmm. Representative Seaton, then Representative Heron, then Representative Tarr.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I guess the question here is, what does it cost to do these permanent identification cards? They're not like they're printing out things that you go down to the store with. You have to go to Fish and Game office, and it's simply a piece of paperwork that they give you recording the information that you do and you certify that you're a resident. So it's not going to be requiring a vendor fee or anything else, because permanent identification cards are only issued through the department offices. So it's I just wanted to clarify that if this was a license and we were changing a license that was going out to all the vendors and there was a vendor commission, that would be different than the permanent identification card, which basically is something that the secretaries at the office actually do and print up. I don't know that they print them out. Maybe they mail them out. I can't remember whether I got mine printed right there. But they're not very expensive cards.
Yeah. Representative Heron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess to the department. So if I have a over 60 card myself, is to use that card, you have to be a resident, correct?
Correct.
So if someone comes back to state and they can't prove that they're a resident, then they can't use the permanent card. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Representative Tarr and then Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess and kind of 2 points on what Representative Heron was just saying. I'm just trying to envision a scenario, though. An individual comes up because they have that card and they pick a species that doesn't require guided service. You know, the potential exists for that individual to have no interaction at all with the department. Is that true? So that, right, there'd be no way to actually know or check their residency or verify their residency.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, you are correct. Once we issue these permanent IDs, they have them and they can come back. So unless a trooper stops them and checks them and then flags it, is the only way you would know. Now, law-abiding citizens, you know, if you're a non-resident, you'd say, okay, now I'm no longer a resident of Alaska, I need to buy a license. But we don't know how often that happens.
Mm-hmm. And then a brief follow-up to that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we look at the language on here, I'm just wondering, and I hadn't really thought of this. This is on page 5 of the amendment, and this would be line... line 3 here, where it talks about the PID issued as that section read before the effective date of this shall continue to be recognized until January 1st, 2019. Is there an issue with, you know, essentially the department having given a benefit that then you are taking away or modifying? I'm just wondering if we would be restricted to making some kind of change like this to the effective date of this law going forward, or are we actually allowed to, you know, for the number of people who already have this permanent identification card, say, oh, well, we've issued this to you before, but now the rules have changed. You see what I mean? Are you allowed to do it for what's already happened, or can you only do it for, you know, the effective date of this bill so that all permanent, you know, all cards issued after a certain date then would be subject to this 3-year renewal?
Through the chair, Representative Todd, no, without probably talking to our legal counsel, I can't give you a definitive answer at this time.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And just on that point, you know, our legal counsel has drafted up this bill. And, you know, this was a discussion item. But, you know, if somebody had bought something, but here they're just issued something that is, you know, was the... where things were being talked about, whether, you know, so it's somewhat different than if you had purchased something of value that you had versus, you know, the state letting you participate in something for free. The other question that we were just talking about was residents, and that was one of the problems was that Fish and Wildlife officials say, but they don't enforce these because there's nothing that says that if you come up and fish the Kenai River with a Winnebago that has a Washington or Idaho license plate, that doesn't mean you're not a resident under the terms of maybe you maintain your voting voting rights here, or you don't even have to be a voter. There's nothing in the current statute that says how you maintain residency. There's nothing that says you have to be a permanent fund resident. There's nothing... You know, when do you change your status as a resident for this fishing game purpose? It takes a year residency to become a resident, but there's nothing that says this is how you lose your residency for fishing game. So the troopers have a really hard time because they don't have a clear statutory guideline of what kind of residency you need to maintain. And if you come up every summer, is that good enough residency in your summer Winnebago home? So anyway, that has been one of the things why we had talked earlier about in cleaning this up so that everybody had to at least recertify that they were a resident of the state, because right now they were a resident when they got their permanent identification card, but there's no time at which they must recertify that.
Any other questions or comments?
Just
Representative Josephs.
I mean, I'll throw in on this. I think Title I has is little as 30-day windows for residency with an intent to remain. So there are different ways to define residency, mm-hmm. as Representative Seaton said. In terms of the prospective versus retrospective provision that Representative Tarr mentioned, I would think what Representative Seaton said would be accurate, that under police powers, you're allowed to make some changes. And if there was no investment, it'd be hard to say that you suffered a deprivation of due process or something like that. That would be my view, but it sounds like that was legal's view.
Any other questions or comments?
Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
Yes, the objection is maintained.
May I ask another question?
Representative Johnson.
If someone were to, example, come up and use this and they were to get a citation, would they, under the Wildlife Violators Compact, lose their license in their home state and the right to fish in any of those other 38 states or hunt or whatever the violation was?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I'd have to check with the Alaska Wildlife Troopers. I know you've been real interested in how this compact works, and every time I have to refer to them for the enforcement part.
And not only interested, I introduced it.
Yeah.
So I think that they would, quite frankly, that they would lose it, and it would be the same punishment in their home state as here. So if they lost their license, they would lose it in all 38 states. You know, we're doing this for honest people, and it seems like, you know, someone's going to cheat is going to cheat. So I want to maintain my objection and maybe speak to it.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And just on that point, I think losing a license is one thing. This isn't, there's no license. This just gives you a free access, but you're not actually having a license. So there may be some distinctions between what you would lose in this state, the ability to participate versus a purchase license. And I'm not sure. I'm just, I know that this is a very unique kind of thing that we have.
So. Mr. Chairman, if I might, I believe if you're cited in Alaska, you would get which required pulling that permit or pulling that license or whatever it is, you would have an equivalent punishment in your own place. So if you're not able to fish here, you would not be able to fish in Montana or California or any other place. The punishment, I mean, we can't punish them more in their home state than we would here, but it would be commensurate. So if they were not allowed to fish here, they would not be allowed to fish in those other 38, 39 states. So it is a very serious crime for you to come up and violate in Alaska. So I'm going to maintain my objection, and if I could speak to it now, if it's
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of unanswered questions. There's the money question. There are a lot of questions, and I guess are we intending to move this out today?
I would like to move it out.
Yeah, I don't want to hold it up. I support the concept. Also, I'm concerned about the balance. I mean, we've talked to five groups, and we had two people sitting here today that I've never seen talk to each other in the hall, or yesterday, the day before. They barely talked to each other in the hall, and they're coming together with this. And so I'm concerned about the balance. And before I do anything that might upset that apple cart and have two of those groups pull out, I would like to not pass this one. I'm going to be the same on any of the amendments and let it go to the Finance Committee where those things can be hashed out, the department can come in. So I'm reluctant to change it. If we were going to hold over, you know, I would be okay. But I just think that I don't want to upset the balance. We haven't heard from those groups. And I think the Finance Committee needs to deal with the money aspect of it. So I'm going to oppose not only this one, but probably the rest of them as well for those very same reasons.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that's my objection as well. Is I have a concern about raising the rate, the age as well, but unfortunately I'm going to be a no vote on this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
I'd like to ask one question of the best mind.
Well, you're in trouble.
And that is, if I may, the question is, would holders of the PID receive something at their last best address indicating that their license had become a three-year license or their privilege had become a three-year privilege?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, our licensing staff has given thought to this over the course of time, and they would be prepared to reach out to every permanent license holder with adequate notification.
Representative Olson.
Just a thought, but why couldn't we put it on the permanent fund application and say that if they aren't eligible for the permanent fund, that they're not eligible for their license and give them notice?
Through the chair, I can't really address that, but I can confirm that our licensing staff, just for checks and balances, when any new application is filled out, they do check against the permanent fund to verify residency. Mm-hmm. So that's a really valuable tool that we do use.
And that was not an amendment.
No, that was a question. Thank you. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And similar to Representative Josephson's question, if we're talking about 80,000 potential individuals, you know, of varying ages. Does that really mean we have to reach out to 80,000, or is there a way to eliminate, you know, some people who maybe have passed on, or do we have email? I mean, just to understand the scope of communication that would need to take place to make this work.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, I would need to work with our licensing staff, but they scrub that list pretty regularly to try to weed out folks who have deceased, and they've done that as recently as the last 2 years, and I can't remember the number, but they came up with a, I would say, fairly significant in the several thousands. So that's also a checks and balance that they do on a regular basis.
Any further discussion?
Just that I assume protocol is that Representative Seaton will, I'd love to hear him repeat the finer points of this and the merit behind it in his view.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The permanent identification card has a problem of unlimited time. We have participants that have definitely left the state. We see them on the Kenai Peninsula all the time. And Fish and Wildlife troopers have said that these are basically unenforceable because they have no standard of residency. There's no requirement that you have a Alaska driver's license or any other way that they can easily check the ID or force somebody to show their voter ID or those kind of things to verify that in a field type situation. So at the time that I had checked, there had not been any violations because there's no citations issued. But that's been a while, so I don't know if there have been any since. You know, I think that the age 65 works well with all the other fish and game statutes, which are on proxy fishing. You can see those pages that are referenced in here, and all those ages of 65. So I think it cleans up our statute, cleans up our fish and game procedures, makes laws that we have enforceable, and we'll have it so that people will come back and we'll have to at least certify that they are remaining as residents of the state. And Fish and Game will have something to check, because if you have to reapply, then they'll have the permanent fund residency at least to check on, and then we'll have something, some way to challenge people to say, you know, you're going to have to show that you are a resident of the state instead of just having this card.
Okay, very good. The objection is maintained.
Mr. Chair, can we have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. House Resource Committee to come back to order at 8:39. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we have enough questions on the financing and all. If we could get a indication that there can be a fiscal note drawn up, at least a draft fiscal note, then I'd withdraw this amendment so that we can consider it in the next committee.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask the folks from Fish and Game, is that a possibility? Can you get us some cost estimates on this particular
Mr. Chairman,
amendment?
Absolutely. Yes. Well,
thank you very much. We appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, that has been withdrawn. Are there any other amendments? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move amendment number N.3.
Representative Seaton has moved amendment number N.3. Are there any objections?
I'll object just because I want to hear about it. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have, as we've heard in testimony, there's a lot of tourists, non-consumptive users, viewers, photographers come to our state, and we are looking to allow them to also participate in helping maintain fish and wildlife conservation. And this allows the public to participate in that by buying a
fish and game conservation decal for $20. And so it's fairly simple. There was some changes proposed in other amendments, and they got very complicated. So we're just going back to this simple rendition. And it's, you know, this is just maintained like a license. The department can limit this if they desire to online sales, if they wish to do that, which would make it very reasonable and cheap to issue. And these would be public records so that the numbers could be established and we would know how many people want to support fish and wildlife conservation but that aren't actually hunters or fishermen or trappers or citizens.
Okay. Representative Heron.
Representative, through the chair, Representative Seaton, so this is strictly voluntary?
Through the chair, yes, this is strictly voluntary.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. A couple follow-ups on what Representative Seaton said. My understanding, and I don't mean this in a flippant way, but this is basically sort of like a pick-click give for a conservation decal, correct? It's a contribution, not tax-deductible, but it serves the sort of similar kind of purpose. Is that a fair statement?
Through the chair, I hadn't thought about it that way, and I'm trying to figure, but yes, or it could be like public radio station where you get a coffee mug or a decal or whatever, or the many other organizations that you want to support, and there's a sticker, and you can, the idea is that, as you can see and hear, the department, by its appropriate means, can solicit art. There's a number of artists that have said that they would like to design decals and things for, you know, they can get these donated as another donation. And the idea is that you could buy one or more of these things. But what we're trying to do is give the fundraising opportunity for the department from this other segment of both residents and non-residents that want to support fish and wildlife conservation in our state, whether it's from their non-consumptive use or maybe people that are fishermen want to do this. So it doesn't restrict any way. It just puts the ability for them to contribute and get a decal for their car or their window or whatever.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I always get nervous when I say delete Section 20 and 21. You delete any section, I sort of get a little nervous. So could you kind of walk me through what those sections are and what they do?
Mr. Chairman, I think we're inserting a new section here, 19, and so it's just changing Section 20
to Section 20. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm.
Further discussion on Amendment Number 2, Representative Josephson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, if an additional amendment that might be moved later tonight isn't successful, and this amendment is successful, these funds, assuming it made its way through this building and was signed by the governor, these funds could be used for intensive game management, and the purchaser wouldn't know that. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chairman, I think we'll need to talk to Fish and Game. I think that Fish and Game is aware of these are probably bought by non-consumptive users, and I think that they would direct the money in that way. The N.5, which you may have had, is not going to be offered. That just showed up at 6 o'clock, and I saw it for the first time when I came in. That get very complicated to try and do some kind of dedicated funding. So we are back to the original idea of trying to be able to allow Fish and Game to generate additional money by people that voluntarily want to buy and support fish and wildlife conservation in Alaska. And so there's nothing in here that absolutely directs them. It's not a dedicated fund. It's very hard to do. And that's why the other amendment got very long. So,
Representative Johnson?
Yeah, I think I'd like an answer to that. Could the money from this be directed at intensive management?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, The way that this just gets put into session right now, it would go into the general fund and be open for appropriation for any purpose because there's no sideboards. We've talked to Representative Seaton at length about this and understand his intent, as much comfort as we could give, but, you know, nothing binds anybody in the future. We won't be sitting here. Maybe some of you won't. So there's nothing to say with 100% certainty that that's how it would be funded. But with that said, you know, every time we come to every session, money is scrutinized and accounted for. So you could be able to say, this decal brought in X amount of money and could be used for this, and it would be shown through the budget process.
Mm-hmm. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I wanted to bring this forward, even though I don't think it's the perfect amendment, because I thought that the Resources Committee should look at this and be speaking on this. Hopefully, the Finance Committee will have enough time by that time to get some sideboards on it so that it goes to Fish and Game Fund, or so that we can get the correct directions to make sure that we are getting there. But I think that the idea is here, and I would hope that the Resources Committee would be looking at how can we generate money for fish and wildlife conservation. So that's where we are.
Representative Josephson and then Representative Tarr.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So it's your understanding, I guess it's the constitutional requirement on dedicated funds or prohibition, that these monies would intermix with general fund monies, and they could end up in paying for a school teacher in Fairbanks or paving a road in Nome. All of that's possible.
With the chair, Representative Josephson, you are correct.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would want a response from the department here on this. If we put in a sentence here that said, you know, funds from this conservation decal shall be directed towards education and wildlife conservation efforts. I've seen language like that in other areas, you know, other places in statute. It's not dedicated, but it's directive, I suppose, in nature. Just could you respond to that if we, you know, added a sentence like that, how you think that might influence the receipt of those funds and the ability for them to go where people might want them to?
Representative Tarr, through the chair, I had a conversation with Rep. Seaton staff where, when we were looking at this, the closest, at least as far as legal counsel would say we could get, it says, you may spend it, and that would give you some sideboard, but you can actually say you shall. At least that's from the conversations I remember through the week when we were discussing this. So you could say you may, and then go to the reasons that are in this other section as far as fish and wildlife diversity, fish and wildlife education, but you can't actually say shall use them for this.
Okay. Representative Josephson. Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Mulligan, the $15 that I pay for a sport fishing license, those monies don't return to your coffers except by our orders, correct? They go to a general fund, but then the department makes the case, as it should, that those are monies that by custom and practice should revert back to you because there's the linkage. Isn't that, that's essentially the system, right?
Through the chair, license revenue goes directly into the fish and game fund, not general fund.
And if someone knows, why is that not a prohibition on dedicated funds?
It's a constitution.
That's a constitutional?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Representative Johnson.
Thanks for giving me one more chance. I wasn't sure about this amendment. I said earlier I wasn't going to support any of them, but I don't think this tips the scales. I don't have any problem with this money going to intensive management, so leave it up to the department to decide and do that stuff. So I apologize in advance for my vote, because I said I wasn't going to, but I think I now support this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Is the objection still maintained?
Nope.
I would object.
You would object? Okay. Would you like to speak to that?
Yeah. So, it's not apparent at this point,
it should be. There is there are two problems. There are basically two problems I see with it. I've heard the argument from people I trust and really respect, several of them in this room, that the non-consumptive users must buy into this to have a seat at the table. That's the fundamental argument. And I think that's a fantastic argument. Of course, they would say they do by buying recreational gear and attending advisory council meetings and all sorts of other things. However, I think a purchaser of this would think, fairly logically, this is going to help me to see wildlife or even fish and you know, eat fish, take fish. That would be an absolutely logical thing for the purchaser to think, but that isn't the case. It might be the case, but it doesn't go into the fish and game fund. So that's problem number one. The second problem is, I was glad that Representative Seaton expanded his sort of opinion or statement about who would be buying this, because it could be all sorts of people would be buying this, from the vegan to the big game hunter and in everything in between. But the concern is that I do agree that generally these are going to be, you know, frankly, many of them will be sort of urban Alaskans, if I can generalize, who enjoy Chugach State Park. They look at wildflowers. They like to look at wildlife. They fish from time to time. They take their family to Kenai Fjords National Park. They don't own their own boat. This sort of category, if I can be very general. And there are tens of thousands of these Alaskans. And they're the groups I've said feel underrepresented before the Board of Game. But these monies could end up supporting intensive game management. So I think there's two levels of potential problems. I think the more difficult one, frankly, is the first one, because they're going to think, well, surely I'm helping wildlife. That's what the decal's about. And it may just not work out that way. So I can't support this, even though I do think they need to buy. There needs to be more buy-in.
Any other comments? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more question, and I apologize if I missed this. I know the Fish and Game Fund is constitutional, one of the only ones that we have. But does it say that the license fees will go to the Fish and Game Fund, or is that statutory? And so would the same opportunity exist for this? And I know we just talked about that, and I think I missed part of it. Sorry.
Through the Chair, Representative Tarr. So when it comes to the Fish and Game Fund, so the reason that it's a dedicated fund is because in order to utilize those funds for Pittman, Robertson, and Dingell Johnson, it's required by federal law that you have a dedicated fund, and that we have that ability through our Constitution to allow that. So that's where that comes from.
Any other comments? Just if I could take the liberty as the chair, which I believe I can, to make a comment. One of the things that was made, I think, was, and this is from my old municipal days, the purchase of licenses and tags are receipts and not taxes. Taxes cannot be dedicated, but I do believe that receipts can be directed, and I think that would probably be my best explanation of why receipts from those purchases can actually be put into that fund. And my perspective is although I'm not crazy about everything that intensive management does, but I do believe that sometimes intensive management actually provides more opportunities for people to see game because of the management of the populations and the ability to actually have those populations thrive. So that's probably just a difference of opinion.
Not fully,
yeah, okay. So any further comment? The objection is maintained. On amendment number 2 for the committee substitute for House Bill 137, version N, and I would like to ask our secretary to call the roll on amendment number 2.
Okay, roll call. Amendment 2. Representative Tarr.
Pass.
Representative Heron.
Yes.
Representative Hawker is absent. Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Co-Chair Nahiak is absent. Co-Chair Tallarico?
Yes.
Six yay, one nay.
We've got to go back.
It's okay. Came back to the
I passed, but it's not going to affect the outcome either way. So, but I think I do have to vote. I think I can crawl under the table.
You passed the amendment. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I apologize. No, then I'm a no. Thank you.
You are a no?
Yes.
Okay, so we have five yay, two nay.
Thank you very much. The amendment passes. Any other action on the bill? We are near the end of our meeting, and we do have another committee of referral, which I think is very appropriate if we can move this to the Finance Committee with those experts in finance dealing with those things. So I would entertain a motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chairman, are we going to have discussion on the amended bill?
We can have a discussion on the amended bill, yes.
I think we should.
Okay. Well, we can discuss the amended bill. Representative Herron, do you have a comment?
Yes. I may have missed it, but the discussion on the main bill, the amended bill, is I've always had a concern about the annual family gross income of less than $29,000 raised up from $8,200. Mm-hmm. My question is to anyone is how many more Alaska residents will qualify?
I don't know that answer. I inserted that number, Representative Herron. That is the $29,820 is the poverty level for a family of four. And the reason that number was selected is because we brought it up to the standard of our poverty level, which I think provides us a baseline somewhere to draw a line for when those should be provided.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to know what would be the fiscal impact on the revenue stream if we was to raise it to that level.
Is there a fiscal note?
I'm not exactly sure. Mr. Mulligan, you look like you might want to.
Through the chair, Representative Herron, I guess the best answer at this time we can give you is that because this section is doing two things. Of course, Representative Tallarico's bill is raising that threshold level, but he also removes the assistance eligibility. And so looking at it, you're evening it out. We may lose some folks' eligibility for a low income, and you're raising it. To get an exact figure, we're not sure because we don't distinguish right now. So when you come in for a low-income license, we don't know whether or not you're meeting the minimum threshold of annual family gross income or whether they're qualifying it because they're on assistance. So we don't know, but just in thinking about it, you're removing one and raising the one up, so you're probably going to come down in one area and up and meet somewhere in the middle. But there's no way to really tell you at this point in time.
So, Mr. Chairman, as I would ask that as a sponsor of this legislation, that this may be a good question for the Finance Committee, and of course it will give time to research it, because I think we need to know what the fiscal impact will be to our revenue stream.
Thank you, Representative Herron. I agree, and I will certainly be more than willing to pass that along to the Finance Committee.
Yes.
Representative Seaton and Representative Tarr.
Thank you. And, that was also a concern of mine because we are taking an individual license and we're saying that you can now be well above the poverty line at $29,000. And if you're a single person, your family income, $29,000. Yeah, that'd be for a family of four, but it's not for a single person. But it seems that we're saying that, a single person gets the same poverty level as a family of four. And so I would, as you take this to the Finance Committee, I would hope that what we would do is, if we're going to establish the poverty line, we should just have it as long as the family unit is below the poverty line. That way, you know, that could be adjusted, but also it would be adjusted by the by the size of the family instead of just one size fits all. So, thank you.
And if I'll just mention on that briefly, as much as we should have them look into that for sure. I actually was somewhat jolted, and I'd never paid attention to it before, that in 2014 our level of income was $8,200 in order to qualify for that license, which seems to be in 2014 dollars substantially low. Any other discussion? Representative Tarr, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on a couple points, I am pleased to see that I represent an area that's a moderate to low-income area, and I think a lot of people have the potential to benefit from the increase in that income guideline, and still think that would be a challenge in our state to afford to live on that you know annual income. So I'm pleased about that, and I want to follow that. I just wanted to comment on the issue of non-resident fees and the compromise proposal that was brought to our attention by some of the groups. We're not dealing with that today, but I just wanted to put it on the record that that was something I was very interested in. I did have an amendment drafted, but we've spoke to people in the Finance Committee in the interest of making sure that this legislation has ample time to get through the full process this session, and we have that opportunity to secure those important federal dollars. So I'm going to be watching that, but just for anyone watching or listening that wanted to put it on the record that we've worked with our finance counterparts and have been they have a similar interest, and so we're looking to see that happen in the Finance Committee and just move so we can continue to move things along tonight.
Yeah, and thank you, Representative Tarr. I appreciate you bringing that to me earlier in the day. Thank you very much. Any other discussion? I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, motion to move CS for House Bill 137 version /N with individual recommendations attached. Or amendments, attached fiscal note and pending fiscal note, out of committee and onto the Finance Committee.
Thank you very much. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, the CS for House Bill 137 version N moves from committee. Is there any other business before the committee?
Dinner.
Thank you very much, committee members. Thank you very much for being here in attendance. And we are adjourned at 8:08.
Yeah, I know.